numbers. By six-figure, seven-figure, eight, nine-figure numbers. I don't think we do, unless you play the lottery. And, in fact, it'd probably have to be Euro Millions to move into that kind of territory. Is there a point at which it sort of slips out of reach? We all know what a tenner's worth. We can get our heads around the idea of a grand, 100 grand, even perhaps a million. £122.7 million is the fine that Thames Water have just received for various rule breaches. And I suspect, like you, I still don't understand how these companies have got away with what they've got away with. But I hope to by 11 o'clock today.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC that planned prison reforms could cost forces hundreds of millions of pounds. Some criminals could be freed a third of their way through their jail terms as part of the sentencing plans in England and Wales. Sir Mark Rowley says some of those offenders will go on to commit more crime. He's made a direct appeal to the Chancellor for more money.
We've got good research which shows safe communities is where people invest. And for every pound you spend on policing, you'll get £4 back in GDP. So we can help the government's growth agenda as well by creating safe communities.
The Home Office says it's giving the police an additional £1.2 billion in funding this year. The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. An inquest will take place in August. Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, had raised concerns about the state of the flat.
Everything that I could get, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please prioritise this family.
Notting Hill Genesis, which managed the property, says it's deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. It says it's working with the relevant authorities as they conduct investigations, and it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest. The Home Office has insisted it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. It follows Sir Sadiq Khan's backing of a review that says possession of small quantities should be decriminalised. London's mayor says it shows a compelling evidence-based case to change the rules. Tens of thousands of people are set to receive payouts of up to £1,000 over the forced fitting of prepayment meters. Energy companies have set aside more than £70 million in compensation and financial support. It follows a review by Ofgem of the way suppliers switched some vulnerable customers to new tariffs. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million in the largest penalty ever imposed by the regulator Ofwat. About £105 million relates to wastewater regulations. The rest is for breaking the rules around dividend payments made to shareholders. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 87.95. That's up 17. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 19. LBC weather, most places seeing sunny spells and showers, feeling quite warm in the sunshine. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Club card accepted.
Feel the power to lower prices with Tesco Club Card. Get a 10-pack of McVitie's Jaffa Cake Original, now £1, down from £1.50. Celebrating 30 years of rewards with Tesco Club Card. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores Jaffa Cakes ends 24th of June. Club Card are up required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Paul's been in touch early. Dear James, he writes, I know you don't take requests, but can we have an hour on the cannabis subject, but restrict callers to the best recipes created after getting the munchies? Paul, that's an outrageous suggestion and a complete failure to take the subject matter seriously. We will perhaps be moving back towards that territory a little later in the programme. But I want to begin with a strange one. Strange in the sense of it not being an immediately obvious question for me to ask you. The simple story, as you've just heard in Thomas's news bulletin, is that Thames Water has been fined £122.7 million for breaching of rules. It is the biggest ever penalty issued by the water regulator Ofwat. They say that the fines follow its biggest and most complex investigation. And they insist, although how they prove or ensure this, I don't know, that the fines will be paid by the company and its investors, not by, if you happen to be listening even in the Thames Water area, not by you and me, not by its customers. £104.5 million for breaches of rules connected to its sewage operations, and just shy of £20 million for breaches relating to shareholder payouts, in other words, dividends. I read something the other day, and I can't remember where. The worst thing you can do, I've said this to you before, is have the radio as your alarm in the morning, particularly if it's not a work day, and you're sort of zoning in and out of sleep. You're semi-awake. And you hear something, and then a week later you're talking to your producer about topics, and you've just got this very vague, amorphous notion of a story that you think you might have heard. Turns out you dreamt the whole thing. You imagined the whole thing. But I read something the other day, or heard something the other day, that I kind of couldn't quite believe. And I do this for a living, as you know. It's my job to be across some, at least, of the detail. I don't think anyone's ever going to be across all of it. And it was the tale of a company that bought Thames Water about 20 years ago. And during their period of ownership, you might want to sit down for this. Do you ever feel obscenely naive? I'm tempted to ask you, in fact, I probably will ask you in the next 10 minutes, whether or not this kind of scandal, whether or not what has happened to our water companies is a feature or a glitch. But do you ever feel scandalously naive? You just think, yeah, well, of course. I do it a bit with the PPE. There's more news in that realm at the moment as well. Some extraordinary revelations coming out about companies that were stuck on the VIP lane and gifted incredibly lucrative contracts without having any interest or backstory or history in that sector at all. Their only qualification for these incredibly plum contracts was knowledge of or acquaintance with senior Tory politicians. In fact, that should be on my to-do list. We should have a little dig into that on today's show, because some of the stuff that's coming out is unbelievable. It's a television programme on tonight about one of the key exemplars of that scandal, Michelle Moan, who I think is still technically a baroness. Someone should make a list of all the people stuck in the House of Lords by the Tories in recent years who've turned out to be either receiving rewards for epic wrongness or, technically, I suppose, epic wrong-uns. But I digress, because this is the story, and I checked it this morning, and it turns out that I didn't dream it. So there is an investment bank that bought a water company. All right, there you go. There it is. My alarm's gone off. Is it yours? An investment bank bought a water company. Why would an investment bank want to buy a water company? Because they're dedicated to the safe delivery of clean, fresh water to the people of these islands? Or is it just because they have profound environmental concerns and believe that protecting the safety of our watercourses and the treatment of our sewage is a bigger priority than anything else that we're currently... Who would you want to own a water company? Anyway, it's an investment bank. 16 million customers in London and the southeast of England. So I don't know how naive you think this makes me sound. So they bought it in 2006 when its debts stood at £3.4 billion, right? £3.4 billion. It's quite a lot of debt, but I guess that's how business works. £3.4 billion. They sold it in 2017 and debt stood at £10.8 billion. Okay? So the debt has gone up from £3.4 billion to £10.8 billion. And then you get the news, if it counts as news, that the investment bank, which is called Macquarie, and other investors received dividends worth, how much do you reckon? £2.8 billion. Now, I am not thick. I have many, many failings, many flaws. But I'm not thick. If I stare at something for long enough, I can generally get my head around it. I'm not brilliant with numbers, but this isn't a mathematical conundrum. This isn't a numerical riddle. I'm not brilliant with numbers, necessarily. Well, that, again, I'm better with words than I am with numbers, but I'm still pretty good. generally speaking, in the great scheme of things, I'd be in the upper percentiles when it comes, because I had a very good education. I'm not claiming any special gift. I had a very good education. A lot of it very expensive. And the final bit, the London School of Economics. So I'm blessed. Educational privilege, if that's a thing. Of course it's a thing. It's why Donald Trump is trying to shut down universities or keep foreign students out of the country entirely if they hold opinions he doesn't like. Do you remember when anti-woke people couldn't tell you what woke meant? But the idea, of course, of being banned from going to university because of your opinions would perhaps have been on their list. They just couldn't come up with many examples of it actually happening. And now their hero is making it government policy. We'll be talking about that with Simon Marks at 11:45 today. So, I am not thick. I'm going to keep saying that until you believe it. I am not thick. And I'm not hugely naive. I've been doing this job now for over 20 years. We have covered everything from the MP's expenses scandal right through to the PPE VIP lanes, the catastrophe of COVID, the epic con of Brexit. You know, I think you'd agree that together, when we put our heads together, we're pretty good. Aren't we? We're pretty good at ironing out the wrinkles, at working out what's true and what isn't. We've been fairly good chroniclers of fake news and misinformation, calling out reality, even as more and more people seem dedicated to the opposite. So we're not thick, and we're not ill-informed, we're not slow on the uptake, and we're not unduly naive. We understand how the world works. And yet there's something about this story that just leaves me absolutely dumbstruck. If I bought something that had a lot of debt and I ran it, in inverted commas, for a decade, let's say, and then I sold it with a lot more debt, and somehow found, oops-a-daisy, look what I've got in my pocket, billions of pounds. So the debt, I mean, I don't need to explain the numbers to you again. I just want you to explain the story to me, to anybody. Imagine that you were in a coma. This is a device we used to use quite a lot on the programme, and it's a good device, actually. We should probably use it again. Well, we're about to. Imagine you were in a coma in 2006 when this company bought Thames Water. They don't own it anymore. They sold it in 2017. I mean, all sorts of debt packages going on. You fell asleep in 2006 when this company had debts of 3.4 billion. You woke up in 2017 when it had debts of 10.8 billion. And you found out that the people who'd owned it in the interim walked away with just shy of £3 billion. And this is a water company. This is a monopoly. This is a company that exists solely to ensure that our sewage gets treated and our taps work. Maybe there's a couple of other things on the list as well, but those are your central... You're running a water company, those are your central things. But they don't, do they? They seem to exist, and this is where I wonder that I might be terminally naive. They seem to exist exclusively to enrich people lucky enough to have bought into a company that has absolutely zero risk and no competitors. So am I going mad, or is this something that we should actually be taking to the streets about, something that's actually happened, something that actually exists? And how are we going to do it as a phone-in? Guys, your turn. I do it every day. I come up with the questions every day. How would you do this one? 84850. Drop me a quick text. If it's any good, I'll do it. Be my starter at 10. 0345 6060973 on the old WhatsApp. I can't sit here waiting for you to get your finger out and finally do some work instead of leaving me to do the heavy lifting every morning. But in the absence of any effort from you, what happened to our water companies? At risk of sounding a little bit like Michael Gove, I don't generally like armchair experts. But actually, in this field, in this area, I think any understanding, if you've worked in the industry, 0345 6060973, if you've just riddled, if you've gnawed at this bone, if you've worried at this problem for longer than I have, 0345 6060973, how does this happen? Because you can sit here now in 2025 and, I mean, you insert your own words here. You can be scunnered. You can be gobsmacked. You can be absolutely incredulous about the actual unfolding reality. Labour were in power in 2006, so a couple of texts coming in are already unhelpful, because it is not the case that this is a direct consequence of Tory shenanigans. Long before that, the Tories actually privatised the water companies. Yes, but Labour, until relatively recently, haven't done anything to try to reverse it. I want you to do something that I suspect you'll find very easy. I want you to imagine that I am stupid. Okay? I want you to imagine that I am very stupid. Not unpleasantly stupid, not mean and nasty stupid, but just a little bit slow, a little bit Benny from Crossroads, a little bit slow on the uptake. And I want you to explain to me how this happened, not just to this water company, but essentially to all of them. How have we sat here in this country, in my case, for the best part of 50 years? How have we sat here and watched individuals and institutions line their pockets on an industrial scale while presiding over epic mismanagement of national essentials, of essential utilities? It's my job really sometimes to convey to you the scale of a scandal that for some reason hasn't quite... It's as if, you know those things in the fairground where you take the big hammer and you smack the thing at the bottom and the little weight goes flying up the thing and hits the bell at the ding-ding at the top and then you win a prize. I sometimes feel that on some subjects I am smashing that hammer as hard as I humanly can into the base of the machine and it's only going up about an inch and a half. I go whack, boo, whack, 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 boo. When really it should be going, I should just have to drop the hammer quite lightly and it goes ding, 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 ding. The whole nation should be up in uproar about this. Water, for God's sake. It's water. It's not widgets. It's not computer programs or something. It's not AI or something that you need or you don't need. Absolutely extraordinary to think that we've all sat here for decades while individuals and institutions, since, let's say, the 1980s, have waltzed in to... I need bigger words. Do you know what I mean? I need bigger words. I say, institutions, utilities, individuals. I need bigger words. How do you describe something as absolutely intrinsic and essential as water? What else is there? Air? They'd privatise that if they could, wouldn't they? They would. I'm not even joking. If Margaret Thatcher could have privatised air, she flipping would have done. And some massive investment bank would have come in, run the air supply into our lungs, taken over a company with no debt at all, sold the company with £10 billion of debt, and mysteriously ended up with £3 billion in their back pocket. I'm not even exaggerating. So there are two things going on here. There are two mysteries. And the second one might turn out to be more interesting than the first one. I mean, certainly the second one is a question at which we can all have a crack. We can all have a go at answering the second one. Why do we let them get away with it? Or how do they get away with it? So how did it happen? 0345 60 60 973. Come on. I mean it. Just give me your best thoughts, your best ideas, your insights. How did it happen? And technically, materially, substantively, how did it happen that something as intrinsic to our very existence as water can be treated as a cash cow to be mercilessly milked by people whose names we don't even know, but who have enriched themselves on a scale that even Croesus would envy? 0345 60 60 973. But the second question is, how did we let them? I use the we very loosely. What does we mean? In the context of sewage, there's not much mystery about that. But in the context of the question that I'm asking you, the media, is it our fault? Is it my fault? The political establishment, did they want this to happen? When they started talking about privatising water companies, did this actually become intended? Is this what they wanted? Extraordinary to reflect that we've all sat here getting angry about all sorts of things. Everything from, I don't know, immigration to low traffic neighbourhoods. I've got a missed information for you on that subject a little later in the programme. All being very carefully encouraged by all the usual outlets to get angry about this, angry about that. Why did no one ever, apart from Fergal Flipping Sharkey, who I love, apart from Fergal, who has been telling, why have we been essentially impotent, silent, useless in the resistance of this epic scandal? How would you describe it? Fundamental's a good word, thank you. Yes, something as fundamental, that's from Aaron, as fundamental to our existence can get turned into a cash cow by cronies and investment bankers. So, two questions, essentially. How did it happen? Technically, how did it actually work without anyone getting thrown in jail? 0345 6060 973. And then the second question, which has only emerged in the course of these pontifications, but in terms of the alarms not going off, us not really noticing, whose fault is it that you and I didn't realise this was happening when it was actually happening? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. It's 20 past 10.
LBC. For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets from only £7 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
The McSpicy French Red Hot is back. It's the McSpicy, but hotter. With 100% chicken breast fillet, melty cheese, fiery jalapenos, and that irresistible Frank's Red Hot mayo. Danger, danger. Make it hot. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only. Subject to availability.
The British Red Cross is here to welcome people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine.
We're here to help people to safety when storms hit.
We're here to show anyone struggling that someone cares.
Hiya, that's a huge help.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
22 minutes after 10, and I mean, typically, not many have taken up my invitation to do my job. As you point out, I'm doing a bit of a Thames water. I'll take home the big bucks. So you do the work of actually coming up with a question. But this is quite nice from Beatrice. What or who took away your anger and motivation to change this and hold water companies to account? Why are you getting mugged? Not only by events, but also by information. And, in my defence, I've been pretty good at this. I was talking to Fergal Sharkey about these matters before it was cool, before everybody was queuing up to send him to some little river in the middle of nowhere and start measuring the amount of sewage in it. I was on it, but I haven't got... And what's the story you've got angriest about in recent years, where you've demanded change? When have the public ever done anything? And yet this just feels truly egregious. Stephen's in Hampstead. Stephen, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello. Hi. I'm really responding to your first question as to what's going on, underlying all of this. I'm a retired chartered accountant who spent much of his life in corporate finance.
Okay.
And one of the things that I noticed was that lots and lots and lots and lots of businesses in Britain, more than many other countries in Europe, are acquired by private equity.
Yes.
And since the days of Margaret Thatcher, it's been possible for businesses to be acquired, but for their assets to be used to finance the purchase. So as a result, in Britain, you have got countless businesses which have gone through purchase, sale, and on each occasion, the buyers load the business with debt, which is financing the purchase and has got nothing to do with the business. Now, there are a few businesses which don't fall into this category. Take Marks and Spencers. They reinvest in their own business. They've got reserves, and they can weather difficult storms, even when their profits go down. They're much less vulnerable. But many, many businesses, in fact, most businesses in Britain, have gone through this purchase resale exercise, and they're loaded with debts. Now, if we're talking about sort of ladies' wear companies, it probably doesn't matter too much. But when you talk about water companies...
Yes, exactly that. This is the crucial distinction for me this morning, Stephen.
Yes, I know. And that's the real problem. What's happened is that this standard methodology in corporate finance has been applied to an essential monopolistic utility, a public utility.
Was it not intended to? I mean, are the people responsible for this sort of looking back shamefacedly and shocked or not?
Well, I don't think so, because it's actually being used widely, and I think in some senses there's a bit of a cover-up, because it's part of a very widespread issue in Britain where many British companies are over-geared, have got too much borrowing, and have gone through this purchase sale. In Britain, you basically build your business to sell it, and when you sell it, the people who buy it use your own assets to finance the purchase. So it's a widespread practice. Problem is that, you know, it's in everybody's interests to keep quiet about this, because it has a very fundamental foundation in the whole British economy. The problem is, it's bad enough, in my view, generally, because it means that our businesses are undercapitalised. Pardon me. But in the case of a public utility like water, it's catastrophic, because they can't invest in their water mains. They can't invest in all the procedures needed to make sure that our water is clean, because they've gone through this corporate finance methodology and they're loaded with debt. Now, if they're a football club, it's not the end of the world.
Well, you choose a football club not by coincidence. As an example, I think you're talking about Manchester United.
Well, I've not looked at their accounts, but it seems to be much the same thing. They're loaded with debt. Why?
Well, when the Glazers took over. I heard that explained in similar terms when the Glazers took over. So, I mean, this is where I feel horribly naive at this point in the conversation, because A, there'll be an awful lot of people listening, whether they realise it or not, who, if they were offered the opportunity to avail themselves of a piece of the action that you described, they would fill their boots. I mean, who wouldn't? If someone offered you a money tap and you were allowed to turn it on without any thoughts for the consequences, all you were going to do is count the amount of money that came out of it, then you would do it. It is naive to pretend otherwise. But what you expect... Sorry, go on.
It's a win-win situation. You can't lose.
From that point, especially with water, because there's no flipping risk and there's no competition. So it is literally a license to print money. But what I don't understand is why we have, quotes, put up with it, end quotes. Why this has unfolded over decades. You know, if it was a six-month smash and grab and then the alarms went off and the metaphorical cops turned up and these people got carted off to jail with their handcuffs on, I'd get it. But this has gone on under successive governments for decades.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I'm trying to grapple with it. Looking into the minds of the regulators and the government, I suppose it makes denationalisation very much easier, because it doesn't actually cost you anything. It costs the buyers anything. They can buy businesses without taking any risk. So it's a great way of getting public utilities off the public list and get them denationalised and privatised. So it's a great mechanism. It just has no regard to the long-term prospects.
But if they were nationalised, then the profits that they make would go back into the company, or they'd go to the Treasury to be used better. So there's literally no defence of this practice. And I fully accept, I'm not a communist, I fully accept that in the private sector, when you're selling things like football tickets or miniskirts, and this is going to be largely unstoppable. But there should be just different rules, shouldn't there, for things that are fundamentals, for essentials,
no
for monopolies,
question.
For utilities. There's stuff on the blooming monopoly board. That's how deep you can go into our national psyche. Just the stuff the electrics company and the utility, the water company on the monopoly board.
course. Well, I remember when all this privatisation was taking place, I joked that eventually they'll be charging us for actually breathing. We'll have to pay for oxygen cylinders on our back. It's gone to such extremes that it's ridiculous. It went to ridiculous extremes with the rail companies.
Yes, exactly.
Where it was broken up and fragmented so it won't function sensibly. And it went to ridiculous lengths in the public utility, which is water. It's an essential, like breathing. So you load it with debt, allow corporate finance procedures to be implemented, whereby it's totally indebted, can't invest. It's nuts. So it, why it was done gets me into the realms of politics. And,
yes, nothing wrong with that. But we've already provided some answers. Briefly, this is brilliant, by the way, Stephen. Thank you. A lot of people listening, very grateful to you. But in terms of the pub, what would you point at? And this, I'm leading you out of your area of expertise now and into the realms of speculation. But what would you point at as the reason why the public haven't responded, reacted in the way that they would be expected to under your reading of what's actually been done to them and their water?
Because they don't understand. I just think it's covered by layers of obfuscation, whatever the word is.
Yes.
And they don't see it. They don't understand it. All they do understand is what comes through in their water bills. I think they're probably beginning to react now because the water bills are going through the roof. They're sort of increasing by something like 30%. And they're very obviously having to pay the price.
And people are walking around with billions of pounds of dividends in their pockets from the companies that are putting up their prices. But don't worry, everyone can relax. Thames Water are adamant that this latest fine will be paid by them and not by their customers. How does that even work?
I think chickens are coming home to roost now because somebody is going to have to pay for all of this. And the people who are going to have to pay for all of this, as things stand, are the consumer customers.
Who've already been robbed, who've been rinsed, if you want to use a slightly more water-related term. I've got to crack on, Stephen, only because the news is already a little late. That was a perfect start. It's given us the mechanics of it, but it makes the other question even bigger, doesn't it? Is how does this happen in terms of the relationship between the public and the facts? Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has told LBC that the government's been silent on the effect of prison reforms on policing. Sir Mark Rowley has warned plans to release more inmates early will lead to more crime. The parents of a boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. Notting Hill Genesis, which managed the property, says it's working with relevant authorities ahead of his inquest in August. Thames Water has been fined £120 million for breaching rules on wastewater and shareholder dividends. It's the largest ever penalty issued by the water regulator Ofwat. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
We all want to live well and age well. That means having independence and positive choices to enjoy the life we choose. That's what Elmbridge in Cranley is all about. A place of fun, a friendship, in a hive of activity. But above all, it's a place to put your independence and well-being first. To find out more about Elmbridge in Cranley, visit our website today at retirementvillagers.co.uk/Elmbridge.
Official supplier of Goosebumps since 1950. This August, the Royal Edinburgh Military Tattoo presents The Heroes Who Made Us, honouring the heroes of the past, present and future. With music, Highland dance, precision drill and bagpipes. Lots of bagpipes. Join us 1st to the 23rd of August 2025. Book your tickets online now.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today. CEL.
Here at Pets in a Pickle, we know there's already enough to think about when welcoming a new pet into your home. Do they like it here?
Have I got them enough toys?
What insurance is right for them?
So, to make this adjustment period a little bit easier, we're offering new customers 12 months pet insurance for the price of 11, with code 12 for 11. Hurry, visit petsinapickle.co.uk now. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10:34, Dermot is in Dublin and tells me that the Irish people fought the privatisation of water in Ireland a decade ago. Watching what's unfolding in the UK validates our resistance. Just hold that thought, because it's not the UK, mate. And there's no reason why you should know this. I haven't mentioned it until 10:34. It's England and Wales. Probably Northern Ireland. Scotland's different. This is another example of why I needed a kind of two phone line side street, like a different lane coming in for people in Scotland to tell me about how they've managed to end up in such a different situation from the rest of the United Kingdom. These people, Dermot continues, are vandals in suits, James, and the devastation they've left behind should be a national scandal. It kind of is a national scandal, but, and I know this is a bit of a pet subject for me, I don't understand why. You know when you look at a machine and it's got cogs turning, and if that cog isn't biting into that cog, if the teeth of that cog aren't properly fitting that one. Oddly enough, it's a game on the Indiana Jones video game that I keep telling you about. What you've got to work out how the cogs fit to get some secret doors to open, and you can put different sized cogs in lots of different places, but you've got to get them in place so that everything turns around and it pulls up the secret door in the Mexican tombs, if you're interested. But the point is that you can flick the switch if you've got the cogs in the wrong place. I'm confident that this is a good analogy, okay? So bear with me. You can flick the switch if you've got the cogs in the wrong place, and some of them start turning, but the one that's actually powered might turn some, but some aren't properly placed, so they won't turn around. I feel a bit like that on this story. It doesn't happen very often, but it's as if this cog is turning, and the public reaction cog, or the response you might expect, the response I'm getting in my inbox, which is not reflective of the reality of this country, or England and Wales at least, it's not biting. The cog's not turning. So here's the cog spinning. This cog here is water companies robbing us blind, okay? While providing appalling service and releasing shocking amounts of sewage into our waterways. So this cog's turning. And this is the cog of how the public should respond. So as soon as that cog turns, the public cog starts turning, everyone goes nuts, right? This is working. This is a brilliant analogy. I'm going to use this more often. We need more cogs. We need more cogs on this program. You can watch it on YouTube if you want to understand this with me twirling my fingers around. It might help a little bit. So this cog here is what the water companies are doing. And that's happening. That's turning constantly. This cog here is how the public would react if those two cogs were biting. The public cog would be going, I'd be going absolutely bonkers. But they're not biting. So this one's spinning around, robbing us blind, robbing us blind, robbing us blind, pumping shocking amounts of sewage into the waterways. And this is the public here. It's not moving at all. Why not? Why not? There are tiny exceptions. Here's a little cog called Fergal. That's spinning away furiously. But that cog, the little cog called Fergal, isn't properly attached to the public cog either. It's probably moving the public cog a little bit more than it was moving previously. But the public cog isn't spinning around at anything like the rate it should be. And that's the end of my TED talk on the subject of cognition. So why? Get it? Yeah? Cognition? Why? Why? And how? Liz is in Winsford. Liz, what would you like to say?
I think I want to answer that question about how I think this has happened. How I think it might happen again. And it's through that kind of ideology that we see playing out when people talk about healthcare, which is another essential service, obviously something that I'm particularly interested in because I'm an A&E doctor.
Oh, okay.
But what we see is the idea that this is a very expensive service that we have to fund. Lots of money has to go into it. People understand that they pay taxes, and taxes goes into essential services. If we don't have to pay for that essential service anymore, then our taxes should in theory go down. It doesn't make much sense when you follow through that you still eventually have to pay for the service. So you will end up paying the same amount anyway. But then you throw in also the type of ideology that comes along with capitalism and meritocracy, and that we hear coming out of reform, that people who run private companies and entrepreneurs are the cleverest of us, and they can obviously deliver these services for much cheaper than you would expect people who work in the public sector to be able to do it. And that, I think, is how we end up where we are.
And sometimes it must be true. Or must it? Maybe that's me being gaslit.
I don't think it has to be true at all. So, I don't think that there is anything inherently better about working for a private company. I don't think you suddenly gain an extra 10 IQ points by working for a private company.
No, I didn't mean that.
In the public sector.
No, nor do I. But I meant more that if, for example, I'm working in the public sector, I am not as responsible for my mistakes as I would be in the private sector. Do you see what I mean? I can just about conjure up. I mean, the classic example would be British Railways, although that I think is another example of something that was carefully manipulated to persuade the public that it shouldn't remain state-owned. But British Leyland perhaps is an even better example. The pressure on a public sector operation is very different from the pressure on a private sector operation, because theoretically, Liz, a private sector operation can fail and a public sector operation can't. That's why the water company, or indeed the NHS, would become so egregious.
But you're only looking at it through that prism of my job and accountability for myself and my job in that scenario. I think the public sector, when you work in a public sector, has the same accountability, but from a different prism. You are held to very high standards. So let's take maternity services in the NHS.
Yes.
Currently under a huge amount of strain, there's a lot of justified highlight on maternity services and how they are struggling and failing. Countries that have private healthcare also have severe issues with women's healthcare and maternity services and maternal deaths. In the UK, we've had 3 public inquiries, and we are pushing for change. It's very high profile at the moment. I sincerely hope that this will push forward change, and that's happening through the public sector. There is a different kind of light that is shone on the public sector, and there is accountability. If you look at what happened with the post office, it was through kind of public work that came to light, and the scandal was highlighted, even though what happened essentially happened because of the private sector. It wasn't the private sector that brought people to account. It was the public that brought people to account.
It was a public space and some excellent journalism, which possibly is part of the answer to the other question about how they've managed to get away with it. I wonder whether, if we were to be boiling it down to bare essentials, I wonder whether there's an ideological difference between people who cannot see the point of something that doesn't deliver a profit and people who recognise, particularly when they're talking to A&E doctors called Liz, people who recognise that some things can't be judged according to how much profit they do or don't deliver. And for me, water would be in the second category.
Absolutely. It is at the bedrock of healthcare, water, education, these things. I mean, rail as well. I mean, I suppose it's the thing that's most likely now to be renationalised.
Yes, but it's already happening.
Those 4 things, I would say, is the least important. It's the least essential service of those 4.
Yeah.
But it's probably also the least expensive because it's the least essential.
It's a question of ring fencing. There is no ring fence of services that should be immune from the prioritization of profit. And if you had to come up with a single kind of diktat that explains what's happened to water companies, is that they were treated like people producing luxury goods. They were, you know, the people who owned the water companies were free to rinse them, to empty them of money and not worry at all about reinvestment, which if you're flogging handbags is fine. You'll go bust or you'll start another handbag factory somewhere. But if you're in the business of servicing 16 million people's water-related needs, it's a crime of unbelievable proportions that they were allowed to get away with this. And you worry, which, in case people are just tuning in, you worry that the NHS is on a similar path. So you're like shouting back a warning from the future that if you don't want the NHS to end up like the water companies, pay attention to what's happened to the water companies.
Absolutely. I'm totally incensed. And on your point earlier about why people aren't out on the streets, if you set a time and a place, I'll be there with you. I'll bring the banners.
Don't put this on me, madam. But you're right. And quite a few people are telling me that if there were any announcements made about plans to do this to Scottish Water, then there would actually be protests on the street. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a counterfactual. It's impossible to prove. But I do know what a statutory corporation is. Right? A statutory corporation is a corporate body controlled by and normally created by statute. So it typically has, I'm just getting this from Wikipedia, you'll understand why in a minute, it typically has no shareholders. I'll say that again. It typically has no shareholders, and its powers are defined by the Act of Parliament which creates it. So it can be modified by later legislation. And Scottish Water is a statutory corporation, providing water and sewage across Scotland, accountable to the public through the Scottish government. No shareholders. I hope this doesn't sound like a stupid question if you're listening in Scotland. How did you get away with that? How did Scotland end up in such an obviously and measurably better position than the rest of the United Kingdom? I genuinely don't know. I don't even think that I should. Some days I realise there are flaws and holes in my knowledge. Some days I think nobody knows everything. I was once told that the last man to read every book that had ever been published was St. Augustine of Hippo, because this was in the days when books were reproduced by hand, by monks. Hardly anyone could read or write. So it was quite easy to have read every book that had ever been written when you were Augustine of Hippo. But these days, nobody can know everything. How come Scotland's ended up in such a different situation? I'd love to know. Just give me a quick lesson. I only want one call on that. But I really, really want it. 10:45 is the time. Thank you, Liz.
This is LBC.
Oh, no.
In the time it takes to unsend a risky text, you could find out if you're one of the Jaguar or Land Rover owners that's owed compensation. Visit claimsforcars.com. Answer a few easy questions and you'll find out in seconds. If your car has a faulty DPF filter, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis.
Phew.
Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit IG.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toca Social. Take on darts, mini-golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:47, and I mean, things are different in Wales from England, but they're not the same as they are in Scotland. Suboptimal, but it is a not-for-profit company, Welsh Water. I'm more interested in how Scotland managed to dodge this particularly hideous bullet that we're examining today because of the news that Thames Water has been hit with the biggest fine. And, you know, is it just me, or is there a little bit of you that goes, yeah, whatever? Actually, no, you don't do that because you're not a teenager. But if you were, you'd go, yeah, whatever. Because if you've taken out billions and billions and billions and billions of pounds in profit, and I know ownership changes, and this is a bit simplistic, then you go, okay, yeah, we've been fined 122.7 million quid. That's an occupational hazard. That's the cost of lining our pockets on an industrial scale. I don't know. Nathan is in Goodmayes. Nathan, what made you pick up the phone?
I had a premonition about this call-in today.
Did
when
you?
I woke up and I saw the news that,
yes,
it, in fact, it aligned very nicely with the fact that British Gas had been ordered to take out, and I know British Gas, it's not quite a monopoly, but it's an oligopoly, which is very similar. There's price fixing, collusion sort of thing happens, and with British Gas, they've been ordered to take out meters that they illegally put in. So
that's correct, yeah.
I think it was...
All the suppliers. It was in the news, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Tell
me about your premonition before we continue with the conversation.
I don't know. I genuinely thought at maybe 10 past 10 this morning, heard your voice talking about this. Sorry, yes, not at 10 past 10, before then.
10 past 9.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And I thought, if you're not talking about it, then who would be? So I thought
that's nice to know. I don't know what difference. Yeah. I'm just making sure that you haven't I don't think you have accidentally maligned British Gas. It's all energy companies.
No, I deliberately didn't.
No, exactly. £70 million in compensation. Yeah. And you're right, it's relevant to the sense of the public being treated like absolute mugs by these massive utility companies. But take me back to how this happens, or perhaps more pertinently, why it doesn't engender, why you were confident that it wouldn't be necessarily a major talking point anywhere else. I don't know that that's fair necessarily. The timing worked for me with the announcement of the fine, but why doesn't it ring more bells, push more buttons, cause more rage?
Well, I feel it's unfortunate I say this as an English person, but I think, and I say English as opposed to Scottish, because in this country, I think there is somewhat of a willful impotence we have. This is the first thing when I genuinely, when I go on a rant, I talk about British Gas, Thames Water, specifically Chris Weston, Alistair Cochrane. I even mention individuals. There are either people that they're...
Well, don't do that anymore, because you'll just worry me about... Because people aren't here to offer up a right of a reply, and also I may not know who they are. So we're clear on what's happened towards the companies. In the simplest terms, debt has increased enormously, and the people running the outfit have walked away with huge amounts of money. So in any other circumstances, if I explain that to a member of the public, they'd be absolutely livid. But the water companies have been doing it for decades. How come? What's the failure of the public? How do you account for that?
Well, this is the thing. I tell people, I genuinely, there must have been about 50 people I've told about this. The more patient of them say, oh, it's just greed, there's nothing you can do about that, there'll always be greed. The thing is, that's true.
Yes.
But we're not just talking about greed, we're talking about breaking the law. Polluting public fresh water is a crime, as is installing meters illegally in disabled and vulnerable people's houses. These are not just amorphous moral things. They are literal crimes. So when people hear that, it's a very clean, clear-cut thing when you start talking about crime, because then you can't be done for slander. If you just say, these people are immoral.
You are, yes, okay. No, I just need to clarify that the eight companies that have been hit with the fines today with regard to the meters are Scottish Power, EDF, E.ON, Octopus, Utility Warehouse, Good Energy, True Energy, and Ecotricity. So that's why I'm steering you away from specifics. Let's talk about the amorphous blob of public opinion. I love your use of the word patient, but I also like your phrase willful impotence, because you're describing people who don't think that their anger would make any difference anyway, so why bother expending the energy? You, however, expend a lot of energy on being angry about these things.
I think it's a quirk of England, because in France, people literally would be burning cars in the street.
Yes,
and I've got
right.
friends in Scotland who said, maybe not Edinburgh, a bit more genteel, but in Glasgow, people would be burning cars in the street. There's some fire we lack. And I think it's because people don't have the details. When you actually go into details, people get more angry because they can relate it to their own lives.
And if their bills haven't gone up, there's a few planets aligning now, isn't there? So there's an epic failure of media. I mean, goodness knows how many people in my industry seem to be dedicated solely to protecting the interests of the super rich. It's absolutely extraordinary when you dig into it, and you've probably got names springing to mind as I speak. But the that's one planet. The other planet is the bills. If the bills are staying low because they are not, you know, they're taking all the money for themselves, they're not. You get a period of grace, don't you, before the sewage starts leaking into the rivers or before things start getting bad. So the public are going to respond to the pennies in their pocket, the pounds in their pocket. And then you've got the what you describe, which is, I suppose, loosely understood as lethargy, just a sort of sense of this not being the business of you and me, whereas, as you suggest, for French people, the relationship between citizen and state seems to be tighter somehow, seems to be stronger.
I think this goes back to feudalism. A lot of the people, we all, myself included, feel a little bit like serfs in feudalism. Because it's a monarchy, I'm not having a go specifically at things, because we believe intrinsically we're in a hierarchy where if you're not at the top, there's nothing you can do. It's a culturally embedded thing.
And some people, of course, welcome it. The culture of doff cap, tug forelock explains so much that's wrong in this country.
That's my responsibility.
And we fetishise money. So the people who, as takes us back to an earlier caller, the people who are really, really rich must be somehow brilliant and must deserve it and must be better than us.
Yes. Sorry, incidentally, you asked about why I'm so angry. It's the other people I talk about it tell me I'm jealous. My 18-year-old
politics of envy. Politics of envy.
Yeah. My 18-year-old nephew, who hasn't got a penny to his name, he told me, you're jealous. You would do it if you could. It's like, well, one, I probably couldn't, and two, I don't think I would, because...
One would hope that the concept of enough would kick in at some point, and I don't need more. But that's why I mentioned earlier, the opportunity to avail yourself of these kind of schemes is going to be attractive to an awful lot of people. But that's all the more reason to regulate. You know, that's all the more reason to put limits on human behaviour. If you're going to argue human nature is such that people will enrich themselves at the expense of the cleanliness of our waterways and the cost of our water bills, then you've got to make sure the people running the water companies have fairly strict limits on what they are and are not allowed to do, which makes today's fine, although it's the biggest in history, look a little bit paltry in the great scheme of things. Nathan, thank you. Let's go to Scotland. Neil's in West Lothian. Neil, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I was just listening to your point about the difference in Scotland. I think there are differences, but I would suggest that they're probably not as great as you might think.
No, I thought you might say that. Someone's already... Go on, carry on. Fill your boots, Neil.
I think the first obvious one is geography. Okay, we've got a bigger area with less people. So, you know, just in terms of infrastructure, we're not going to need as much to deal with the issue. I think the politics is relevant as well. We were much more averse to the whole privatisation thing around about 2000, so it just didn't happen. But then the problem...
Why? Just pause, because Nathan opened up some interesting historical cultural angles there, didn't he? Why would the reaction of the average Scot be different to the reaction of the average English person when they're offered a choice, for example, on whether or not utilities get privatised?
I just don't think it's ever been a thing that fits in with the Scottish psyche. I mean, we have always been more to the left. Scotland was always a vote in Labour, hasn't voted Conservative since the 1950s. Mm. And I think the whole attitude is that the public sector can do it better and at less cost, and it's not about lining the pockets of shareholders. So I think all of that stuff resonates. And certainly, I worked in the Scottish Government in 2000 with the decision makers that were looking at this.
Okay.
And I remember being in meetings with special advisors and others, and they were just petrified that if this happened in Scotland, that they would lose support. This whole privatisation thing, it hadn't worked for the Tory privatisations in the 1980s, and given that the Parliament was new and it was trying to find its feet, it was just felt, if this was the first thing that we did, it would just work against us. So for the politics and the geography, those are two reasons
and the morality, I think. Perhaps.
Well, yeah.
It's
yeah,
ours. Why are you carving it up and handing it over?
Yeah. That brings us then to the problems, right?
Yes.
When it was privatised in England, a monitoring regime was introduced, which meant that every single one of your sewage outflows was monitored.
Yeah.
Less than 10% of the outflows in Scotland are monitored. There was a report by Environmental Standards Scotland published last year, the year before, which pointed towards some of our sewage outflows are flowing in more than 500 times a year.
Yes.
So there are issues and there are problems, but we're not monitoring and we're not picking it up. And
Okay.
there's an issue there. And then you're right to say that there's not as much money swirling around because we don't have shareholders to service. But then we set up a water industry commissioner to regulate this. And go and look into the history of that, where the guy had to leave office because of issues with expenses and sending people on courses that cost tens of thousands of pounds. And, you know, the same problems with...
Just a different flavour. I mean, if I was given the choice between two companies that were being run identically, but one of them wasn't siphoning billions and billions and billions pounds off to shareholders, I'd choose the one that wasn't. I mean, it just feels preferable. But you're right; it doesn't necessarily guarantee massively different.
No, and the problem is the same at the end of the day. In England, there's not enough investment from the private sector. In Scotland, there's not enough investment from the public sector. So both systems are struggling.
People want more for less. They want more and more from the state, and they want to pay less and less for it. There's a hard rain coming, isn't there? If these political movements that promise to cut taxes and cut public spending continue to gather momentum,
we're not in a good place to fix any of this just now, I'm afraid. So I think there's just going to be more of the same. And on that happy note.
I bid you farewell. Thank you, Neil, bringing it in bang on time. He's better than me. This is nice from Pat in Perth. They write, let me explain this to you, James, in an analogy that will make sense. Are you suggesting that my cog-based analogy did not make sense? How dare you? It was brilliant. Very few people are cognizant of just how good it was. Ever been for a meal that you didn't like and the waitress or waiter comes over and says, is everything all right? And you, being British, say, yes, absolutely fine. This is why the British public adopts the attitude it adopts when it comes to anger about public services. It's not. We're an incredibly angry nation now. You know, you don't see the online rage about things that haven't happened is off the absolute charts. But rage about things that have happened and things that have been done to us, perhaps by design, remains minimal.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Britain's most senior police officer has warned that prison reforms in England and Wales will lead to more crime. Some criminals, including serious offenders, could be released a third of the way through their jail terms as part of the changes. Sir Mark Rowley says there needs to be serious investment to deal with growing demand. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has told LBC that ministers haven't considered the full picture.
They're silent on that fact. They're silent on the effect on policing. They've just looked at fixing the problem within prisons and probation. We want to see the data and be able to do the analysis that helps us understand the impact on policing and how many hundreds of millions that's going to take for us to be able to respond to the extra demand that's going to create for us and for communities.
The Home Office says it's backing the police with up to £17.6 billion this year, an increase of £1.2 billion. London's Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan has backed a fundamental reset in the law on the use of cannabis. He says there is a compelling evidence-based case for decriminalising the possession of the drug in small quantities. Sir Sadiq has endorsed a report by the London Drugs Commission, chaired by the former Cabinet Minister Lord Faulkner. He's told LBC it's a compromise that stops short of fully legalising the drug.
A lot of people in numbers have real problems from cannabis use, so you don't want to encourage cannabis use and you want to provide proper support for people, but criminalising people who possess it was a disproportionate and unhelpful thing to do.
The Home Office says it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million over sewage spills and shareholder dividends. Ofwat says the fines will be paid by the company and its investors, not by customers. One person has been killed after troops opened fire on crowds waiting for aid supplies in Gaza. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says there was a loss of control momentarily at the distribution point outside Rafah. Another 48 people were injured. Being overweight as a child, teenager and young adult has been linked to a higher risk of bowel cancer in adulthood. Scientists in the Netherlands say their study enhances understanding of the impact of early life factors on the disease. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 16 points at 87.76. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.19. LBC weather, most places seeing sunny spells and showers through the day. Feeling quite warm in any sunshine. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The best seat in the house is no longer in the house.
It's outside with the sound of birds chirping overhead. The best table isn't in the house either. Or pillow, or outdoor lighting, or sun lounger. But you knew that already. Visit IKEA online or in store to level up your outdoors this summer. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Goodness me. Now, when's the last time we had a phone in about cannabis? Anybody? I tell you, but my short-term memory is shot to pieces. I genuinely can't remember. We used to do it all the time. It used to be one of our hardy perennials, didn't it? I for a number of reasons. It's a subject that I have quite a lot of interest in because April of last year, apparently. How did you do that? Do you keep a record of this? Nonsense. Really? Why? What, for legal purposes? Oh, okay. So over a year ago then. I reckon on a good year we probably did it 10 times back in the day. We did it about the partial decriminalisation of cannabis in Germany. We discussed on the 2nd of April 2024. I just remembered that. But we used to do it on a very regular basis. We used to have loads of conversations about it. I, to be fair, the audience for this program has grown so much recently. You probably don't know my own boring story that I used to recount endlessly whenever we turned our attention to this issue. I got into trouble. Oh yes, I got expelled from school and into trouble, brief trouble with the police over cannabis in about 1990. And because the school I went to was quite grand, it was national news. It even made the news at 10. Although, of course. They didn't name us specifically. They would just say, four boys have been expelled. And it could have ruined my life. I've always thought about this. I'm a big fan of The Road Not Taken. I think partly because I'm adopted. So when you grow up, even if it's not conscious, even if it's subconscious, you're very, very aware of chance and luck. You're very aware that you would somehow be the same person, but not the same person, if you'd taken a different turn in your life, if you'd gone down a different path. I mean, there's a reason why Robert Frost's poem about this is one of the most famous in the canon, isn't there? About two roads or two paths diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. I took the one less travelled by. If you'd gone down the other path, you'd still be, chemically, biologically, you'd still be the same person, but you wouldn't be. And that I guess, is what adopted people have underpinning their entire existence. If you had, but it shouldn't just be adopted people. If you'd been abandoned at birth by your parents, you would be very different from who you are now. I mean, like left in a phone box or something like that. Or if you'd had different parents from the ones you got, if your mum and dad had divorced, if your dad had had a drink problem, if your mum had had an affair. I mean, there's so many paths that will be formative for children, but it's not part of your identity in perhaps the way that it is when you're adopted. And probably, in terms of paths not taken, the one I used to think about a lot more was the expulsion from school, because it was such a big deal at the time. Things have turned out okay, but at the time, it sort of compromised my university choices. It brought a lot of shame into the house, not so much the association with the drug as the actual expulsion from school. It's a terrible business, and you wonder what if that had never happened? I might have been a little bit more political, got more involved, gone down that path, maybe gone to work for a political party after university, got more involved in politics at university, get involved in the union and the speaking and all that. I don't know, and frankly, these days I don't care. But what I do know is this: as a white public schoolboy in 1990, that was not going to mess up my whole life. I thought at the time that it might. And that's healthy. But it wasn't going to. Looking back now, I 35 years later, I can categorically say it was never going to mess up my whole life. Unless I decided to, cut and run and become a massive dealer or something like that. The actual trouble I got into at that age was never going to have ramifications for me for the rest of my life. If I had been a young lad from the inner city, ethnicity I don't think necessarily relevant at this point, I think it might have done. You know, if I'd had that on my record when I was applying for the kind of jobs I would have been applying for if I wasn't heading off for university, it might have actually affected me. And that's where my interest used to really kick in. I used to think, how ridiculous is it that something so innocuous, for all the conversations you can have about impact and mental health and whatever else it may be, it is innocuous in the great scheme of things. The impact it could have upon a young life was extraordinarily disproportionate. You know, I remember sitting there with the Humberside drug squad, and even in my terror, there was part of me thinking, haven't you got better things to do? They obviously were used to working undercover, because I remember one guy had a massive beard sitting in my headmaster's study with a bloke who looked like a hairy biker before we even knew who the hairy bikers were. And that was obviously, unless it was a sartorial decision, but I just presumed at the age of 18 that was to help him go undercover. I thought we're just a bunch of lads. We're just normal men. We weren't actually innocent men, but we were just normal men. We're innocent men. Surely you've got better things to do than dedicate huge amounts of resource and personnel to busting a few schoolboys for smoking weed. But no, apparently they didn't. And extraordinary, really, that it is now 35 years later and you could still get expelled from that school for this offence. Possession of cannabis should be decriminalised. A commission set up by Sadiq Khan, chaired by Lord Falconer, who's a close ally of Keir Starmer, has recommended that possession of cannabis be dealt with under the Psychoactive Substances Act rather than the Misuse of Drugs Act. So it would still be a crime to import it, to manufacture it, or to distribute it, but if you were caught with a small amount of it, it wouldn't matter. It would not be a criminal act. A couple of ways into this. The first is, has it happened to you recently? What happened? I actually don't know. I know it's tied up inextricably with stop and search rhetoric and stop and search legislations, but what actually, how much damage does it do to your life in 2025 if you are caught in possession of a smallish amount of cannabis? Forgive me for asking you that question, because I should know, but I don't. It's a long way off in my life, that kind of experience, but I actually don't know the answer. How much damage can it do? What is the impact? What are the ramifications in 2025 of being caught by the police with a small amount of cannabis? And I presume it only happens. I mean, it's so ubiquitous now. You can't really go anywhere without smelling it. And that's not confined to London. I was in Kidderminster a few weeks ago, walking through the town centre, and someone was smoking a joint just by the Swan Centre. And it was utterly unremarkable. Nobody batted an eyelid. There were small children around, and it was just entirely normal behaviour. So I can't quite get the angle that I need. I can't get the handle that I need on how big a problem it actually is. So my 35-year-old perspective was very much, this could mess you up. This could affect your job prospects. This could affect your university prospects. This could get you chucked out of school. All of that was true. In 2025, I just don't know how urgent this kind of legislation is, or this kind of move is, because it seems to me that it would just be catching up with where the public have gone anyway. But I could be wrong. This could be white privilege. This could be class privilege. This could be wealth privilege. I don't know. If you're caught, you're not going to be caught unless the police have decided to get you to empty your pockets for some reason, or they've decided to come over because you are clearly consuming cannabis in a public place. But that happens all the time. So, what? I didn't know I was going to go in on this angle, but it's an interesting one, isn't it? What is the current relationship between cannabis and criminality? That's your starter. That's not where the conversation is going to end, but it's where I'd quite like it to start. Who's been busted? Is that still the right word to use, Keith? Is that what the kids say? Who's been busted lately? And what happens when you are busted? 0345 6060973. Because, anecdotally, judging by the number of people who are smoking weed in public in this country, nobody's getting busted anywhere. Ever. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. And then you've just got this question about sending a message to society that cannabis is not a big deal. I know that there are studies into the relationship between cannabis consumption and psychosis. They're quite hard to pin down precisely because a proclivity to smoke cannabis or a proclivity to do anything that alters your brain chemistry may actually be related to conditions that then become exacerbated by the alteration of your brain chemistry. So it's a little bit hard to distinguish between causation and correlation, but generally speaking, I still consider it, as someone who hasn't gone near the stuff for years, I still consider it to be absurd that you can get a criminal record for possessing it. You can argue with me on that if you want. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. Apparently, it's called Muckbusted now. So, if anyone's been, I knew I wasn't keeping up to date on this matter. So, if anyone has been Muckbusted lately, then quite a few of you making that joke actually. Chris, I can see, and Martin, and two or three others who don't have their names on their messages. And Stu says, if you get busted, you get banged up until the year 3000. These are strong. This is good gags. Good gags. Top bants. But it's an important conversation. 23,864 cannabis offences in London in 2023. So I'm wrong. 24,000 people done for possession. What happens next? How do you get done for possession? Is this more interesting than the old debate about whether it should be decriminalised or not? I think in the first instance, for me at least, it is. What happens these days when you get done? 0345 6060973. How much negative impact does it have upon your life, your situation? And how relevant is that impact to where you are in life anyway? Socioeconomically, ethnically, geographically. I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you want to catch people in possession of cocaine, just hang outside the nightclubs of Chelsea on a Friday night, pick people up by their ankles and shake them till their pocket's empty. But they never do that, do they? Much more likely to be in less wealthy parts of town, telling kids of rather different backgrounds to empty their pockets or else. So that's part of the conversation. And then we'll do the old school bit. The government don't look likely to move on this. A spokesman at the Home Office saying there is no intention of changing its status. But let's do a question I've never asked before. If you were looking at decriminalisation, if you were looking at legalisation, if you were looking at all of these things, why should it be a crime? Come at it from the position that I don't have. Why should it be a crime? Tell me why it should be a crime. So tell me what happens now if you get caught. Tell me why it should be a crime. And tell me why you think the government aren't going to change the rules, even though this expert panel has handed down the decision that they should. 0345 6060973. It's 11:16.
LBC.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous.
High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
18 minutes after 11. James, please don't say my name. Throughout my entire career in the police, I just gridded personal amounts of cannabis. I'm not familiar with that word, but I can work out what it means from the rest of your message. The ramifications for young kids far outweighed the benefit to society of formally punishing them. They were immediately 20 quid or so out of pocket, and therefore, in a way, they already had a consequence. I never had to fight a weed smoker, unlike the desperate heroin addicts who would cause untold harm to society. I'd add drunks to that list as well. You very rarely encounter people who become full of rage and anger, incoherent with rage as a result of consuming cannabis. So what happens now if you get busted? How big an impact would it have had on the lives of the 23,864 offenders in London in 2023? Why do you think it should be or should remain a criminal act to possess a relatively small amount? Ideally, your position will be based at least on some experience, but not necessarily. 03456060973. And then the kind of crucial question, what would change? What would actually happen if it was decriminalised? In a way, your answers to questions one and two will determine your answer to question three. Let's start with Geoffrey, who's in Leicester. Geoffrey, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Long-time listener, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Oh, fantastic. Long-time listener, I'm very excited to call you. And actually nervous, I didn't expect that.
It's only but, me.
I was looking forward to an only me. So I've got a lot to say. I think that the government could do a lot with legalising or decriminalising, however you want to put it.
Oh, well, no, it's that you can't do that. I mean, it's a huge difference, legalising and decriminalising.
But we're
talking about decriminalising today.
Okay, so I've got a bit of a system and a thought I'm going to throw out there. Yeah. I'm not in the law, so I don't know which one this would be. But if we, let's say, legalised what people call legacy weeds. So these are the old school Moroccan hashes and your really seedy weeds like African bush weed and things like that.
Do people call them legacy weed? Genuinely? No, or did you just make that up?
It's a term I've heard from Americans who, you know, when they've legalised, but I don't know how common that is.
So, yeah, okay, I understand what you mean. Not skunk would be a looser way of putting it.
Yeah, your old school weeds. So have them available and in publicly owned shops across the country so that you can go there and get low-grade, low-THC, regulated cannabis that you know what's in it. And then anybody that's in prison for selling it works in those shops. Anybody in prison for growing works in the farms. So you've got prison reform, you've got taxation, you've got jobs.
Well, they might not want to. What if they don't want to work in a farm or work?
Well, it's an offer. I'm sure. I know many people who love growing cannabis.
The first bit of the plan is interesting. So you're not talking about decriminalising. You're talking about. Do you know how many states in the United States of America have it actually legalised? Not decriminalised.
It's only a few, isn't there? No. It's only at three or four, isn't it?
It's 24.
Okay, oh, sorry. I'm not great with statistics and numbers, but
24
have
US states. I didn't know until this morning. And a market in New York State alone is worth $1 billion. So they're not,
exactly.
But they're not talking about doing that. They're simply talking about decriminalising it. Do you know how much trouble you get into these days if you get caught in possession?
Well, it's been a while since I've been caught, but in the UK I've been caught twice. And each time was a slap on the wrist. And don't do it again.
And they just send you on your way. So not even a criminal record. Geoffrey, take care. Thank you. I guess you need to have a clearer idea of how much damage was done, if any, to the 23,864 lives of people. Some people perhaps were caught more than once, but give or take 20,000 people in London in 2023, because I just don't know. Sandra is in Finchley. Sandra, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello,
I was just kind of ringing really to say that, yeah, my son at 17, like an idiot, was walking the streets near his college, smoking, joint, whatever, and got pulled by a couple of policemen. So as he was under 18, I got called. We had to go down to the police station, and we had to agree to a community resolution order. which obviously took it out of the courts. It's not considered part of a criminal record. But when I started looking into it, that can stay on the local police station records until he's either 100 or dead.
Why do you think that they went for him, as it were?
I don't know. I mean, I mean, the college he went to was down in London. I've been down to visit it many times, and there was a little green next to it, which was just filled, I mean, with people partaking. I just think he was an easy target for them that day for whatever reason. You know, they were, I don't know, they, you know, he wasn't causing a problem. He was just walking around the streets. Whether that day they were told to just stop anybody.
To get some collars. How worried are you about the impact it will have on him going forward?
I mean, not hugely. In terms of jobs, I don't think it'll be an issue at all, you know. What was interesting was when I started looking at things like Esther's for America, and he couldn't answer truthfully on that.
Yeah, even though there's 24 states in America where it's legal. I mean, it's a bit of a mad anomaly there. I remember when they were trying to cause trouble for Prince Harry over that as well.
Yeah. So, you know, it just seemed like, why couldn't they have taken it off him?
And just sent him on his way. Do you think he might have been a bit lippy?
No, God, no. I think he probably cried.
He was terrified because you sound like a great mum, by the way, because you've got the right mixture of disapproval and defence. But it is absurd, really, that he ends up potentially carrying a record indefinitely for something that you can encounter on every street in this country on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, surely there should be a limit to how that kind of is kept on record.
Yeah, I don't see what purpose it serves to have it on the record anyway. I mean, what alarm does it ring? What flag does it raise in the context of future behaviour? Has he learnt his lesson? I mean, because in a way, this is the perfect example, because you're kind of going, part of me is going, it's no big deal, you shouldn't get into trouble for it. But actually, if he is going to get into trouble, has it put him off for life? Or I mean, you don't have to answer this question. Or do you think he still enjoys a smoke every now and then? Plead the fifth.
I don't think it's put him off for life.
He's a severe diplomat. Well, maybe you are, Sandra. I don't know. 25 minutes after 11 is the time. Phil's in Newbury. Phil, what would you like to say?
Yeah, along a similar vein, really, but a slightly different angle to it. So I've got a 17-year-old son who is at college, and now and again at the weekends, I'm sure he smokes, well, I know now, he smokes weed with his mates. Yeah. And he'd smoked it on the Saturday. On the Wednesday, he was returning from college in his car, having just passed his test, and was rear-ended at some traffic lights by another car. And as a matter of course, the police breathalyzed him and the other driver. And they also drug wiped him because he was a teenager, presumably.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so this is 4 days later. But I now know, having researched it heavily, that it's a pretty much zero tolerance system for cannabis. So if there's any trace amount in your system, then as far as they're concerned, you are drug driving. So as a result of that, he is going to lose his license for a year. He will have to retake his test, and it will stay on his driving record for the next 11 years. Despite the fact that, I mean, it's clearly a slam dunk. You know, he showed that there was cannabis in his system, albeit from 4 days ago.
It's a slightly different proposition. I mean, you're quite aggrieved on his behalf, but a lot of people listening will be seeing a huge difference between, albeit with a 4-day wait. I mean, it wouldn't happen in the context of alcohol, would it, in that way? But the difference between simply being found in possession while you're walking down the road and being found in control of a motor car is different, right?
Yeah, I absolutely accept it's different.
Still 4 days.
I'm not, Well, yeah, and I blame myself for not giving it any consideration when he started driving, that he might be using weed at the weekend, and I should say to him, look, even now, it's having researched it. It's not, as you say, it's not like alcohol, where 24 hours later you kind of know you were right. Some people can smoke cannabis and the next day they can drive no problem. Others, it can be in their system, for days and days afterwards. So, the call wasn't really a sympathy thing. It was just kind of...
No, it's another anomaly, isn't it? And, I mean, but this wouldn't change. Your boy would still be in bother because he wasn't done for possession, was he?
No, he wasn't done. He wasn't done for possession.
So even if they decriminalised that element of it, it wouldn't have made any difference. Then what was the actual offence, the technical offence?
Driving whilst over the prescribed limit of cannabis.
Yeah, and of course the goalposts are so far apart that it can be. I think it stays in the system for 30 days. So the idea that would then be a fair treatment of a 17-year-old. Does it stay on his record as well?
Yeah, I think it does stay on his record.
And he lost his license. And he lost his license. So that again feels like breaking a butterfly on a wheel. It feels as if the response, if you like, the counter is considerably more serious than the offence in the first place. There's plenty of room to disagree, either with the detail of what some of our callers have told us or with the central thrust of the conversation that we are having. It's coming up to 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
The head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC that prison reforms could cost forces hundreds of millions of pounds. Sir Mark Rowley says some offenders who are released early will go on to commit more crime. Tens of thousands of people are set to receive payouts of up to £1,000 over the forced fitting of prepayment meters. Energy companies have set aside more than £70 million in compensation and financial support. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million in the largest ever penalty imposed by Ofwat. The fine, which the regulator says won't be paid by customers, follows breaches of wastewater and dividend rules. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician, and to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't diver, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Getting ready for summer? It's time to scrub the barbecue, mow the lawn and dust off the wine glasses. At Waitrose, we're getting ready with 25% off six or more bottles of wine or fizz over £6. Like a fruity San Leo Prosecco, perfect with aged Parma ham. Or a crisp Whispering Angel Rosé, ideal for your first barbecue. And our number one Chablis, the aromas of fresh peach pair beautifully with a seafood salad. Start the summer with some great savings at Waitrose. Selected stores and lines, subject to availability. Excludes Scotland, boxed wines and bottles priced £100 and over.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:32. I tell you what, though, it's not the biggest example of pendulums, because no pendulum has moved in the course of our lifetime, except in the sort of context of how the police informally respond to possession of cannabis. What if it was decriminalised or legalised, and then we ended up with a weirder government who wanted to reverse the pendulum again? It's so bizarre that this has been a topic of conversation in this country for 50, 60 years. And yet here we are. The Mayor of London commissions a special panel chaired by a former Justice Secretary. They conclude that cannabis should be decriminalised. The Mayor agrees. And the government say no chance. I got some indication that it can still have a negative impact on people's lives. But the... The inconsistent nature of it is really hard to pin down. Why did the two lads that we've heard about get their collars felt when so many kids who go around smoking weed on a regular basis have not? Fran is in Chatham. Fran, what would you like to say?
Hi there. Yeah, I'd just like to say the problem with these kind of drugs is that it's very slim chance, but you can get something called a contact high. So that'd be very slim. Someone next to you, if in a room with you for any certain amount of time, they could end up breathing it in and getting a reaction to that. And the problem is, give my breath back, I've been running for the train.
That's all right. Do you want to take a moment? I'll come back to you in a minute.
Oh, no, it's fine. I'll go back now.
Okay.
So the problem is these drugs lead on to different kind of drugs.
Well, yeah, but if they're decriminalised, you remove them from the criminal realm, so they're less likely to lead on to...
When they start off with this, then they stop having the same kind of effect on them. So then they look for something a bit more stronger to have the same kind of effect.
I know you're a police officer, but I just need to correct a couple of things. That's not what a contact high is. A contact high is when you think you feel as if you are on drugs, but you're not actually. So it could be the placebo effect or social conditioning. It's not the case of what you might loosely describe as secondhand smoke. So that's categorically not relevant to the conversation that we're having. The argument about gateway drugs might be, but I mean the evidence or the widespread nature of cannabis use has gone up and up and up over the years. If we were to be serious about stopping people moving on to harder drugs, then surely the answer would be to stop criminalising people who are using the softer drugs.
You could say that, but I had a friend that started off on this when we was at school. Myself never touched it, not to say that because of my job, but I have never touched it. And he went on to use heroin, something he said he would never do. He used it once and it killed him.
But, I mean, and that's a terrible thing, but here's a million people who've been smoking it every day for 20 years and never gone near heroin.
You could argue both cases, but...
Well, no, you can't really. I mean, you can argue one strong example. I can argue absolutely habitual use by millions of people up and down the country for decades. And no one's arguing for the decriminalisation of heroin. The idea that you shouldn't decriminalise cannabis because your friend died of a heroin overdose is, respectfully, a bit daft, isn't it? What about alcohol? What's that a gateway drug to? Is beer a gateway drug to whiskey?
Well, you could ask like a lot of people's parents maybe started off on that kind of that way.
Yeah.
And if they would wish that they could have somehow, somewhere along the way, have changed the way things went. And maybe it's because I'm on a personal note with my friend kind of thing. Maybe it's that. And I've seen the way it can actually affect people.
Of course.
But he did start off on that with that way. And if you spoke to his mum now, she would literally say that that was when things started to get bad. It went from there, then it didn't actually give him what he wanted anymore, so then he went on to do something else.
But it was criminalised when he did it.
It's not criminalised, it doesn't mean that you won't try and find something else that is next best thing for him.
But it can't be an argument against decriminalisation. Something that happened when it was criminalised can't be an argument against decriminalisation.
I just personally don't think it should be decriminalised. There's no reason for it to be decriminalised.
Doesn't it use up loads of your time, which could be spent doing more important jobs?
I no longer do them kind of jobs. I'm in a specialised department, so I'm actually away from all that. But I can see what you mean. But the police are not searching everyone that they smell cannabis on anyway, because they can't, because it, like I say...
Which makes it feel so unfair when someone does get pulled over or when someone does get searched for it. It's as if it's completely arbitrary. It depends what mood the police officer is in or whether or not they like the look of the person who is smoking weed. Because I could walk out of the studio now and see 30 or 40 people. By the time I got to Hyde Park, I'd see 30 or 40 people who were smoking weed in the streets.
It's not down to the way they look or stuff like that. It's down to
it might be. If I was wearing an obnoxious T-shirt or I had a silly hat on, and a police officer might think, or I said, you know, I was wearing an NWA T-shirt telling the police what to do to themselves. I'm much more likely to attract the attention of an officer than I am if I'm wearing a three-piece suit. And some people might not like three-piece suits. So just, it's so arbitrary, Fran, that it should just be decriminalised.
The way searching goes is they have to paint the picture. Yeah. So they have to tell you the reason why they searched you. They have to give you all the points to, because of this, this,
they searched me because I can smell cannabis on you. But the real reason is because I don't like the look of you.
Yeah, but then how many other people around you at that time when they're smelling that? So they can't just search just because of a smell. It has to be more than that. They have to paint the picture to say the reason why.
I have had many, many, many phone-ins about stop and search where many, many people have told me that was the only reason they've ever been given. Indeed, in some cases, you know, you can just claim that you look like someone who committed a crime around the corner. That's why I'm going to have to say. We both know that stop and search is a very blunt instrument, and that there has to be a reason why, if there are five people smoking weed in the park, the police decide to search only one of them. But maybe they toss a coin or roll a dice, or maybe they don't. Bill's in Greenwich. Bill, what would you like to say?
I just think it should be decriminalised because basically I end up smoking it from a young age because I lived in a household full of domestic violence.
Oh, sorry.
It was my only escape route from the age of about 12, so I basically ended up smoking it with my friends. I ended up getting arrested. Instantly, I felt hard done by because I was only trying to escape the domestic violence, so I ended up getting arrested more times. Carried on smoking it for years, got to the age of about 18, 19. I was selling it. I've been charged with this, so I can tell you. I was selling it to my friends just to supply my own habit. I ended up getting arrested, nearly went to prison for it.
For intent to supply or just for possession?
No, for intent to supply.
Okay, because that would not be decriminalised under this. But the cycle you describe...
I don't think it should be, yeah.
The cycle you describe is fascinating. Can we play a game? Do you mind?
Yeah, go on.
If cannabis hadn't been illegal,
yeah,
or possession hadn't been criminal, then much of the difficulties of your youth would still be there, but what would have gone differently for you in life if you hadn't been committing a crime every time you scored some weed and smoked some weed?
I just wouldn't have felt hard done by. I would have been able. My doors would have been open to more different jobs.
Yes.
Many things like that. I mean, I was training to become an ambulance driver a few years ago, and basically they dropped me when they found out about the cannabis charge that was from my teenage years, even though that was like my dream job and I really wanted to help others.
That's a brilliant... I wasn't expecting such... Well, I couldn't be guaranteed such a powerful answer to that question. But...
And the thing is as well, as a kid, when I was nicked for it, I ended up going to the community youth offending team.
Yeah.
And I used to see a drug counsellor there, and even he said to me, stay away from the hard drugs, but weed is fine.
Yes.
That's not the first time I've been told that by people in authority.
No, I think most people, no offence to Fran, who was on just before you, recognise that the gateway argument is a little bit out of date.
Thing I wanted to say on that. I mean, I've never touched another drug in my life. I hate other drugs. I despise them, if I'm honest with you, but I just see weed as a plant, which...
And that's a generational issue as well. For my parents' generation, when I got into trouble, and it didn't have anything like the impact on my life that it's had on yours, which I think is relevant and interesting as well. But my parents' generation, it was just drugs, Bill. I mean, there weren't any distinctions. I might as well have been Zamo Maguire off Grange Hill, which is probably a cultural reference you don't get. But they didn't distinguish, whereas, as you say... people who habitually use cannabis are not, by any stretch of the imagination, somehow more likely to be tempted to take really powerful drugs or to start taking really dangerous drugs. In some cases, like yours, the opposite is true.
I couldn't agree with you more on that because my mum has always been the exact same. She's never touched a drug in her life. She hates drugs and she's always hated me smoking it. But the fact is it was my only escape route. And another thing on that is like... where I had a little bit and I end up getting arrested for it.
Yeah.
A few years later, 2018, they've changed it now, so you can get it for medical use. So for me, who was selling less than £100 worth, now there's people in England exporting it by the ton who are making fortunes from it. But then the little people like me who just was trying to feed their own habit, I got the book thrown at me, basically, and now I've got that charge on my file for the rest of my life.
We are the largest producer, I think, of the world's biggest producer and exporter of legal cannabis for medical and scientific purposes is, drum roll, the United Kingdom.
I know, it's crazy. I just don't understand it. I think it's just because they can make more money from it the way it is.
Well, I don't know that they can. I mean, they'd be taxed $1 billion a year in New York State alone is what they reckon the market is worth. That's not what they're making in taxes, but you do the maths. What situation? Can I ask about where we are now?
I'm a plumber. I work for a plumbing company, to be honest with you, and I have done for a good few years now. I go to work every day. I live by myself, and I function completely normally now. I'm out of the household where the domestic violence evolved.
But you still smoke weed a bit?
I vaporise it now because I can, because I have a medical exemption for it and I get it medically now.
Okay. I think you're a perfect case study for why the law is, at best, massively out of date and at worst, ridiculous. Bill, thank you for calling me today. That was really helpful. 11:43 is the time. Vicky's in Chester. Vicky, what would you like to say?
I'm a mental health nurse. I've worked in police custody, prisons and substance abuse services over quite a long career. I think the issues are in the sense that if you do arrest young people and you do criminalise them, I just think it's counterproductive. I mean, where I work, when young people are caught with cannabis, they're usually just given a community resolution, which means it doesn't appear on their criminal record in the future. Plus, it also entails them some education around substance misuse. I mean, there are risks for young people using cannabis. Related to psychosis or drug-induced psychosis.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, which obviously the onset age is somewhere between 14 and 25. So when young people are using cannabis, especially males, that they're placing themselves at risk of developing that. But that only represents a very small percentage of the population.
Yes, it does.
But in terms of decriminalising it, I just think the government could make a heck of a lot of tax revenue from that, which they could then invest in drug services, education, mental health. And I believe criminalising any drug user is counterproductive. You know, they then keep our prisons full, when really we should be focusing our target on drug dealers rather than users.
Yeah, I mean, even then, I suppose decriminalisation possibly is a step towards legalisation, and you'd actually be shutting the drug dealers down if you did that,
exactly.
and bringing it into legislated and regulated markets like they've done in 24 US states.
Portugal do it for every drug at
I know. I mean, that is something we need to find out more about. But in terms of your world, how much damage can getting into trouble do to a young person? It may not be a question that you can answer, but I'm just intrigued by that element of this conversation.
It depends on what they're caught with, really,
yes,
doesn't it? You know, it's more about cannabis, you know, under a couple of grams. They just generally get a slap on the wrist and off you go.
Mm.
But, you know, obviously if it's other drugs, then it becomes a different matter. And obviously if you're a repeat offender, then that obviously then will criminalise you. But like the gentleman said before, you'll then be open to youth offending services, which will also provide you with support. Because like you said, you know, a lot of young people use it because of the home that they live in, what's going on in their lives. And a lot of it's around maybe they just need that extra support, but it then becomes their go-to coping strategy, which then for further on down the line, that can be really quite difficult.
Yeah, they should be getting different forms of health and support. What a great call. Thank you, Vicky. And it speaks to this notion that's grown up since 11 o'clock this morning, that we haven't heard a single win. It's good for society that we decriminalise cannabis because... ... I suppose you could chalk up the gateway drug arguments and the rest of it under that banner, but I don't think they butter many parsnips. Simon Marks is in the United Kingdom at the moment. I don't know if you're aware of that. And he will actually be in this studio shortly to discuss matters American, chiefly the latest stepping stone on the path to fascism, which is an absolutely unfettered attack upon, that great enemy of the state, university education.
LBC. This morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got...
how will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street or Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. The current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So, don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
The British Red Cross is here to welcome people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine.
We're here to help people to safety when storms hit.
We're here to show anyone struggling that someone cares.
Hiya, that's a huge help.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My Claim Group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Hillary's mid-season sale just got even better. Get up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's 10% off all blinds, curtains and shutters. And an extra 10% off our new range of awnings and pergolas, with measuring and fitting always included. Book your free in-home appointment today. Visit hillarys.co.uk. Hurry, Hillary's extra 10% off everything must end 2nd of June. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10 to 12 is the time. This from Lowell. Benny from Crossroads and Zamo Maguire. You're really spoiling us with the boomer pop culture references today, James. That's not boomer. It's Generation X. It's not boomer. Boomer would be the Beach Boys or something like that, wouldn't it? Crikey. 10 to 12 is the time. Simon Marks, as you know, is standing in for Ben Kentish on LBC this week, which means he has hopped across the Atlantic, where he normally plies his trade as LBC's US editor. And whenever he's in town, we like to grab him by the scruff of his neck and drag him into this studio. There's a book, Simon, by the professor of philosophy, the Jacob Urofsky professor of philosophy at Yale University. And his name is Jason Stanley, and he wrote a book a couple of years ago called Erasing History, How Fascists Rewrite the Past to Control the Future. Now, you, like me, have been a little bit wary in the past of reaching too quickly for the F word when we're talking about Donald Trump. But let me read you something that he wrote in September of last year. In the United States, the Republican Party has long been aware of the democratic potential of student movements. As it lurches closer and closer to authoritarianism, it will, like all right-wing authoritarian movements worldwide, seek to crush dissent, starting with university students and faculty. That's September of last year, and here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the various targets that Donald Trump is going after, they all come out of the classic authoritarian playbook. He's going after the judges. He's going after the lawyers, literally the nation's white-collar law firms. He's, of course, going after journalists. He's going after scientists. And now he's really turning his fire on universities with this crackdown, particularly on foreign students, the other. Now they've announced overnight that they are suspending all interviews at embassies and consulates all over the world for applicants who are seeking to study in the United States and are seeking student visas. As you know, Harvard was told a few days ago that its right to bring international students into the country is being revoked. That has led to a pretty substantial degree of chaos yes. on Harvard's campus, because you've got thousands of international students there who fear they need to start packing their bags and leave the United States immediately. And all of this, according to the Trump administration, is an effort to prevent what they refer to as radical propagandists from finding themselves in a position where they can participate in acts of anti-Semitism on campus, by which, of course, the Trump administration means that these students are engaging in their constitutionally protected free speech right to participate in pro-Palestinian or, in some cases, pro-Israel demonstrations on campuses. This in a country with, as you were saying, James, a long tradition of campus activism. Go back to the 1960s, to the civil rights struggle, to Kent State in the early 1970s. A long history of this. The Trump administration wants nothing to do with it. And what it's really doing is cracking down on those constitutional guardrails. The First Amendment protects those protesters from doing what they're doing, unless, of course, they engage in criminal acts of violence.
Of course. So, I mean, it's opinions that are essentially being...
Yeah, well, we've seen Rumeysa Ozturk, the yes. Turkish student at Tufts University in Massachusetts, seized off the streets by masked agents of the American government for the simple thought crime of publishing an op-ed critical of Tufts University for failing to divest itself of Israeli interests that it holds in accordance with a vote that had been taken by the Senate at Tufts University. Seized off the streets and disappeared by the government for, I think, 72 hours, while her lawyers eventually tracked her down to some detention facility in Louisiana, 1,500 miles from that street off which, to the view of onlookers, she appeared to be being kidnapped.
I mean, there are two ways into this. And as with all things Trump, it could be any of them, or indeed one that we haven't thought of. Either he does have a particular problem with pro-Palestinian protests or people describing Israel as committing war crimes, or even as Kenneth Roth, former head of Human Rights Watch, explained to me not long ago why the word genocide is now applicable. But that would mean that Ehud Olmert, the former Israeli Prime Minister, is not allowed to study at Harvard, because he's used the phrase war crimes in recent days to describe what is being what is going on in Gaza. So either he has a particular animus for Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel's continuing actions in Gaza, or he's got a particular problem with universities in general. I'd lean a little bit more towards the latter.
Yeah, I think it might not be either or.
Yes.
I think it might be both and. I mean, we know that the Trump administration, going against some of those early participants in the pro-Palestinian protests on campus, was literally provided names by pro-Israel political action groups in the United States, given names of people that they were recommending Trump go after. And some of those names included Mahmoud Khalil, for example, and others who have been seized and threatened with deportation. But I think more broadly, you know, authoritarian governments crack down on institutions that threaten their ability to be authoritarian, and universities are among those institutions. This is not a uniquely American Trump experience. We've seen it in many other parts of the world where hardline rulers have gone after people who might seek to constrain their constant desire to acquire more and more power. What is so extraordinary, though, is that for this mercantile president, the most mercantile of all American presidents, there are 1.1 million international students studying in the United States. Last year alone, they brought $44 billion into the country. They created...
Because it costs a fortune in tuition and housing.
I mean, one one of the reasons why my two lads are not in American universities. They're studying over here.
Yes.
378,000 jobs are created as a result of the presence of that 1.1 million international students. So it's amazing that the man who wants to keep 10% baseline tariffs on all British goods apart from steel, aluminium and 100,000 British cars a year is not making the argument that actually these international students, let's be honest, are not radical propagandists. They are an absolute engine driver for the American economy.
It's bizarre. I mean, how often do we use the word bizarre or indeed fascistic, as you've perfectly explained? But it also means that a lot of young people in this country, I think there are 10,000 Brits.
10,000 undergrads, yeah.
10,000 undergraduates who will be thinking about where they're going to go in September. It's that time of year, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well,
and, I mean, who would want to go to the States now? They're going to vet everything that you've ever done on social
literally
media.
Literally going to vet social media.
Opinions they disapprove of.
Looking for opinions among the student body, among the faculty, and among the administrative staff at all these universities if they want to carry on receiving federal funds. And the federal funds, Harvard, you know, it's got a massive endowment. It will survive Donald Trump. Many of these universities have much smaller endowments on which they can rely, and so those federal funds are hugely important. I do think there are two big challenges here for the British government. Number one, what kind of support is it going to give to those 10,000 British undergraduates in American universities in the event that they do suddenly have to pack their bags and get out? And number two, there is such an opportunity here to say to American families, yeah, Britain is open for business. Send your kids here. Help restore the funding for British higher educational institutions. And this is happening, of course, at precisely the moment the government here is actually making it harder for international students to come and study in the UK, which seems like, to my eyes, a monumental own goal.
You know why. It's because numbers, isn't it? It's because we need to bring down net migration. But it means a terrible time to be a young person, and now they're having some of their educational opportunities shut down by the President of the United States of America. I mean, of course, one thing you can say with some certainty is that he backs down a lot, doesn't he? Certainly on tariffs, but on this one, I suspect less likely.
Yeah, I mean, everything's a transaction, isn't it? And there was some indication that Marco Rubio had actually backed down from cancelling some of the student visas that they were threatening to cancel a couple of months ago. But they have come at this now with such vehemence. And because they are so hostile to universities, J.D. Vance made a speech a couple of years ago absolutely laying out that the plan was to, as a priority, root out radicals from within America's universities once they got back into power. They've gone so far down that road that I think they would find it very difficult now to row completely back.
Yes, and here we are. What time are you on tonight, Simon?
10 o'clock tonight, in for Ben, 10 till 1.
There you go, appointment to listen. The time now is 12 noon. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Mark Rowley has told LBC that prison reforms in England and Wales will step up demands on policing. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has warned some offenders who are released early from jail will commit more crime. Criminals could be freed a third of the way through their terms as part of the changes. The former Inspector of Constabulary, Zoe Billingham, says forces can't meet targets on their current resources.
I see how stretched frontline officers are every single day as they run towards danger to keep us safe. So there is a need really for government to listen to this quite unique call really by police chiefs to make sure that budgets are safeguarded for the benefit of all of our communities.
The Home Office says it is backing the police with up to £17.6 billion this year. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million over sewage spills and shareholder dividends. Ofwat says the fines will be paid by the company and its investors and not customers. The firm's still looking for new investment as it struggles under debt of about £20 billion. The Home Office has insisted it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. It's responded to calls from London's mayor, Sir Sadiq Khan, for possession of small quantities of the drug to be decriminalised. Sir Sadiq says a review shows a compelling evidence-based case to change the rules. Tory frontbencher Helen Whateley has told LBC she is against any relaxations.
I don't think that the way forwards to address violence in cities, and for instance, yeah, there's a huge problem with knife crime in London and problems with drugs, is to be soft in drugs and to go down the line of legalising cannabis. That's not the right answer. We need to be tough on crime, and that includes being tough on drugs.
A bin worker has died after being hit by a refuse lorry in Devon. Police say the crew member in his 20s died at the scene in Torquay yesterday lunchtime. The health and safety executive has been informed. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is in Berlin to meet the German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz. He is seeking more military support after an escalation in Russia's bombing campaign in recent weeks. Mr. Merz announced on Monday a lifting of a range of restrictions on weapons provided to Kyiv. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 87.64. That's down 13. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, most places seeing some sunny spells and showers this afternoon. Feeling quite warm in any sunshine. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. This is a bit strange. It's possible, and I know that you don't expect this of me, it's possible that we're about to do a phone-in that could be loosely filed under motoring. In case you don't know my history in this field, I am allergic to motoring phone-ins. Apart from the eternal question of whether or not there is anybody old out there feeling poorly, few subjects are better guaranteed to make the switchboard in a studio like this light up without yielding a single contribution of interest. Parking tickets that you felt were unfair, smart motorways that you feel are an egregious denial of liberties, anything motoring related. And of course, because so much of phone in radio historically has been listened to by people in cars, motoring topics have always been very, very popular. But it depends what you're prioritizing, quantity or quality. I'm yet to hear a very interesting radio phone in about any of the hardy perennial subjects of motoring related conversation. But something quite strange happened in the last 24 hours. The first thing is this. I was walking home yesterday, and a mum went past me. Quite a lick, quite a speed, on one of those little scooters that have electric engines. She wasn't wearing a helmet. And since I don't know if you know, I damaged myself. I had quite a nasty gash in my head a few weeks ago as a consequence of coming off a line bike after skidding on a little bit of ice on the way to work. And so ever since then, I've really noticed helmets with regard to cycling. I kind of should have known sooner. I remember James Cracknell telling me about how important it was to wear a helmet because he probably wouldn't be alive if he hadn't been wearing his when he was struck by a truck while filming in the United States of America. But sometimes, you know, you almost need to have your face rubbed in it. There's no PMQs, by the way, in case you're wondering. They're on holiday this week. As Michael in Wolverhampton asks, couldn't Nigel have waited and taken his holiday this week instead? I'm sure he's got better things to do than be an actual MP. Michael, he was probably down in Clacton looking after his constituents. Definitely not in Nice with his trotters up. But I saw this mum go past, and I tell you what this phone-in is going to be about, all right? It's not actually going to be about motoring. Am I turning into an old git, or is this actually a major scourge? That's what this phone-in is going to be. I'm sorry if that's too self-referential for you, but it works for me. Am I turning into an old git, or is this actually a scourge of the modern age? That's going to be the phone-in. Because this mum zipped past me, and I know what you're thinking. How do you know she was a mum? Well, wait. She zipped past me at a rate of knots. These vehicles seem to me to have got quicker and quicker and quicker with every passing month. And I clocked, as I said, that the mum was not wearing a helmet, and I felt that little kind of, you know, when your mouth goes like a cat's bum, I felt that little sort of purse of disapproval creeping up on me, not necessarily visibly, but internally. I was pursing. I was going like this. Ooh, that's that disapprove, like sucking a lemon. That. Ooh, dear, disapproving. You see, for two reasons, and only one of them would be selfish. I swear to you, since I had my little accident, my first reaction is, oh God, I hope she doesn't fall off, because she's really going to hurt herself if she does, right? And then my second thought, inevitably, is this is blooming dangerous. I could be crossing that road. And you're really flying now on these little vehicles. Quite a few of you are pointing out that it's perfectly possible that this is a scourge of the modern age, and I am turning into a miserable old git. The producer, so take this up with her, not me, has also pointed out that any callers poised to agree with me on this issue could also be turning into old gits, so their evidence and their contributions are not necessarily reliable. But anyway, so I'm doing the cat's bum thing, and I'm feeling the internal disapproval, and I'm also coming from a place of kindness and thinking, I really want to please wear a helmet. Please. And then her little girl comes past as well, going at roughly the same speed on a little mini electric scooter. So it's mother and daughter. It's half term, so they wouldn't have been coming back from school. And they've got, like, matching scooters, like, big and small, little and large. And so she's zipped past, and then the little girl, probably about eight, and she's not wearing a helmet either. I swear to you, you're not going to believe me, because I've already introduced the old git possibility. I swear to you that my initial impulse is one of, oh dear. My initial impulse is, how can you let that little girl ride around at that speed? I mean, it's bad enough on a push bike. These are going considerably faster than push bikes. And then my second one is, oh, this is outrageous. Wouldn't have happened in my day. Which, of course, it wouldn't, because the technology didn't exist. Rob writes, I've never examined my cat's bum in that much detail, James. I'll have to rectify the situation when I get home from work. No, don't, Rob. Seriously, you won't thank me. But you know the expression I'm talking about. You might have to check YouTube out for that little portrayal. And that let my thoughts run slightly into all the other stuff as well. So my local supermarket does a lot of deliveries. I'm increasingly fascinated by people who can't be bothered to walk to their local supermarket and going to have a delivery done instead. I understand if it's an emergency or if you're not very mobile, but the number of deliveries now zipping around London, and I hope this isn't a London-centric subject. I'm pretty sure this is true in other cities and towns as well. But the vehicles that these guys are riding now, they're like something out of Mad Max. Some of them have got wheels that are so wide, You could sort of, I don't know, knock down a small wall with them. And they're all different as well. You see, there's a million different, it's a world I know nothing about. There's a million different variations. Some of them are scooters, as we say, except that they've got engines on them. Some of them are, to all intents and purposes, off-road motorbikes, except they've got electric engines rather than internal combustion engines. There's a lot of trouble going on off-road in parks, but also on streets. And so I'm holding these thoughts in my head, and I'm very, very conscious of old git syndrome. I'm very conscious of it. What was that brilliant thing that we looked at yesterday from Douglas Adams? Do you remember the way that you can determine your attitude to something by roughly how old you were? Well, should we call it old gititis? I think we'll call it old gititis. That's got a nice ring to it. So I'm very conscious, especially doing this for a living. So easy to turn into an old git when you do this for a living. And I want to resist old gititis. I really do. And that quote that we got yesterday from Douglas Adams was perfect, wasn't it? So it's all about the age you are when something new happens will determine almost entirely how you feel about the thing that has happened. I'll find it for you shortly and share it with you again. But it was blooming good. I think we can all agree about that. So I'm constantly conscious of the dangers of slipping into old gittitis. But I wasn't going to talk about it on the radio, probably for that reason. A, it's a motoring topic, right? And B, it's got all the trappings of old gittitis. But that little girl wasn't wearing a helmet. So there's two stories here. There's the grown-ups zipping around like extras out of Mad Max, endangering themselves and others with a sort of abandon. And then there's the idea of it becoming more and more commonplace to the point where children are doing it as well. But I wasn't going to talk about it on the radio until I opened up the Sun newspaper today. It seems to me to be the only one that's picked up on this story. And they report that police are set to get powers to crush the bikes. They list off-road bikes, e-scooters and cars within 48 hours of seizing them. Currently, you've got to wait 14 days before you're allowed to dispose of a vehicle, which means you can reclaim it quite easily, and that removes the deterrent for repeat offending. It speaks to intimidating street racing and off-road biking in public parks. We'll extend it to all sort of antisocial behaviour. Some of these bikes apparently are legal. If you ride a legal e-bike responsibly and legally, the bikes and scooters you are talking about are illegal. Well, that must be true, because a Lime bike is an e-bike, right? I mean, is there a distinction between the ones that oscillate between pedal power and electrical power and the ones that don't? I don't know, and I'm not going to apologise for not knowing, because it is a rapidly growing and largely undiscovered country. But stuff happens sometimes in plain sight, and we don't realise how bad it is until it's almost too late. You think most obviously at this point probably of online safety. You know, suddenly we wake up one morning and realise that online safety, particularly for children, is a genuine scourge of the modern age. Scourge of the modern age. I entered a public speaking competition when I was 15, and that was one of the options. The scourge of the modern age. So I chose GCSEs. And I won. But anyway, the way that online safety of children has gone, absolutely unremarked until it is almost certainly too late. You know, it takes a drama like Adolescence, or it takes the special day that we on LBC dedicated to online safety to really drive home how far the problem has gone, how deeply dug in the problem is. But it's happened in plain sight. It's unfolded in front of us. There's echoes here of the conversation we had in the first hour about water companies and their egregious conduct. But it's not impossible that this is a massive, massive problem. And that's my question for you. Am I turning into an old git, or are these vehicles that are zipping around our streets now, children quite often in the saddle or on the... What's the flat bit of a scooter called, Keith? Do we know? Footplate. Children quite often in the saddle or standing on the footplate. It may be we hit 12 noon today, and I will once again have been reminded why I never go anywhere near topics that are even vaguely related to motoring. But if it hadn't been for the juxtaposition of the mother and daughter zipping past me yesterday evening, the newspaper report today, I've got the quote from the Minister for Crime and Policing, Dame Diana Johnson, talking about the reckless driving bringing misery to communities. We need a little bit of a heads up on what's allowed and what isn't allowed, what's legal and what's not legal. But generally speaking, I think that this is far too little, far too late. I think they're a bloody menace. I've thought it for some time, but I've guarded against articulating that feeling for fear of turning into an old git. So that is your 12:15 question. These e-bikes, these scooters, are they a menace on a scale that has gone largely unrecognised by the authorities? 0345 6060973. Or am I just turning into an old git? Or could it possibly be a little bit of both? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. And you will get through. 0345 6060973. Why on earth shouldn't the police be free to crush these vehicles if people are using them in an unpleasant or antisocial fashion? The problem I've got is that I can't really conceive of how they're not being used. Why have they become so prevalent? Absolutely everywhere and causing untold damage. But there will be a lot of people listening to this who swear by them. I was a big fan of the Lime bikes until I fell off mine. So you just sort of have to recognise, James, that the world has changed, that things have moved on. This is where the old get. Look, it's a funny phrase, all right, but it's true. You guard against something because it's new and it wasn't around when you were young. And we'll find that Douglas Adams quote shortly that drives home all of the points that I'm trying to make. But you have to recognise sometimes that things have changed and they might discombobulate you, but it's actually a change for the better. And that's why I'm talking about old gittitis. That's why I need to be clear. Because I think in Paris they introduced them and then removed them again, didn't they? The ones that were publicly available. I've got the Douglas Adams quote. It's absolutely perfect. I'm going to share it with you now because I just feel that he expresses what I'm trying to convey rather better than I do. So bear with. The way it works is this. Anything that is in the world when you're born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works, right? Rule one. Rule two. Anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. And then this is rule three, and this is where old gittitis kicks in. Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things. So, are these vehicles an absolute menace, or am I suffering from Douglas Adams' third rule that anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things? And do you know what? I'm glad we've done this, because hand on heart, as I prepare to throw open the phone lines to you, I honestly don't know, and I'm really interested in what you think. It could be that this is me coming the closest I'll ever come to launching a form of moral panic. Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Experience Roland Garros like a VIP this summer with an all-inclusive hospitality package from SDH Group. Savor every moment from your arrival at the dedicated VIP entrance through to spectacular first-class catering and, of course, the thrill of world-class tennis action up close from your reserved premium category seats on the showpiece Philippe Chatrier court. This is a unique opportunity for you to enjoy Roland Garros in style. Brought to you by SDH Group. For full details of packages and to book, visit sportstravelhospitality.com/Roland-Garros.
I thought you used Clearpay to buy those trainers.
Yeah.
But you're wearing them now.
Yeah, they're mine when I buy on Clearpay. Just get more time to pay.
Clearpay now accepted at JD Sports. Pay in 4 instalments over 6 weeks. Download the app. ClearPay is unregulated credit. Use responsibly. 18 plus. T's and C's eligibility criteria and late fees apply at clearpay.co.uk/terms.
Are pets in a pickle? We know there's already enough to think about when welcoming a new pet into your home. So, we're offering new customers 12 months pet insurance for the price of 11 with code 12 for 11. Hurry. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk now. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 12 is the time. So we have a little bit of need for further information. And then we've got a fairly strict or fairly clear tension between Douglas Adams' third rule, anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things, or it actually is a menace. It actually is a kind of unfolding disaster on our streets. I speak, if you're just joining us, of police getting powers to crush off-road bikes, e-scooters and even cars within 48 hours of seizing them, which will prevent miscreants from being able to claim them back. Sam's in Bristol. Sam, what do you reckon?
Hi, Sam. James, great.
It happens a lot. You carry on.
So I'm not a self-prescribed old get. I drive an electric bike. It's a legal one. So the clarity in the law that I think you were missing is you can drive electric bikes. They need to be 15 miles per hour or lower, and they need to be pedal-assisted only. They can't have a throttle where you can drive them without any sort of pedalling.
So everything that I've seen with a throttle is illegal?
Yes. So, well, I was just talking to your producer then. I think in the short term, maybe clamping down on them may work, but there's a bit of a juxtaposition, I think, when they tell us we need to be greener, we need to use more greener modes of transport, and then they clamp down on the only green mode of transport that's affordable.
Hang on, what about a pedal? What about a push bike?
Well, a push bike is great, but if you're somebody like me, so I travel 5 miles to get to uni every day. I live in Bristol. It's incredibly hilly.
It is very hilly.
You'd need to be very, very physically fit to comfortably commute for 5 miles in Bristol on a push bike, or at least trying to be very physically fit, which I'm not particularly doing right now. I've got a lazy man's bike, I like to call it. The other thing is I think there's a socioeconomic thing in play. You mentioned earlier on about delivery drivers and how fast they drive around. The thing is, we've created a gig economy where these delivery drivers, if they're not delivering their food at a rate of knots, they're not even making minimum wage. And I feel like there's this incentive to get there faster. Another thing is we don't allow these drivers to insure their bikes and put license plates on them and drive them properly.
So there's definitely a need for something to change fairly drastically, but it's not necessarily born of my misgivings. It's born more of yours.
We should be allowing people. So this is the law for scooters and for certain electric bikes. You're not allowed to insure them. Therefore, there's no way you're allowed to drive them legally. If we had a system where we could insure these bikes, therefore you could drive them as a law-abiding citizen, bikes and scooters, then people might have more incentive to drive properly, not skim red lights, not go over the speed limit.
Be conscious of veering too far into a motoring conversation rather than a moral panic conversation, please.
So. Yeah.
This is all about the moral panic. Nothing to do with skipping red lights. But I understand the frustrations that you describe. Do we have any idea? I mean, so as I make my way around Brentford of an evening and I encounter countless vehicles in various categories, do we have any idea how many of them are illegal and how many of them are legal?
If you see somebody skimming round going faster than 15 miles an hour,
What's that in kind of layman's terms? What sort of animal goes at 15 miles an hour full tilt? A cat?
I don't know.
This is a phone in.
Sure.
This has got phone in written all over it. What animal has an average speed of 15 miles an hour? That's what the people deserve to. So, I mean, how fast? If I'm thinking, oh my God, you're going to kill yourself if you fall off now, they're probably going faster than 15 miles an hour or not?
Think about it. A car driving past the school is going 20 miles an hour, isn't it?
Yes,
so slightly
good point.
Slower than that. But my bike, for example, goes about 15, and I need to. Well, it goes faster than that if I'm going down a hill, obviously, because of physics.
Yes.
But if I'm just going flat using the pedalist, it will assist me up to 15 miles an hour. And then if I want to go faster, I need to pedal hard.
Oh, okay.
Whereas if you see a bike that has a throttle, it's illegal. If you see a scooter, it's illegal, apart from the ones that you can hire for a couple of minutes or whatever. And also, if you see something going quite clearly faster than 15 miles an hour, they are also illegal. But I think there should be a way to legally drive these vehicles so that people aren't incentivized to drive them like maniacs.
I think that your point about delivery drivers is actually quite strong and quite humbling. Listen, for me, I hadn't thought about that. These fellas literally have no choice. In fact, Joe's been in touch to say, as an ex-Deliveroo rider, this guy is absolutely nailing it. So that we've created the necessity for the technology, even as we worry about the technology.
James, I live in Bristol. We have a literal favela in Bristol underneath the M32 motorway of foreign delivery drivers who have come over here and are being paid less than minimum wage and are scraping by living in caravans that are leaking through the roofs just to get by. These are the sort of people that we're talking about that have these electric bikes. If they don't get the food there in 5 minutes, they're not being paid even minimum wage. So I think there's an incentive to drive them like this.
We're moving heavily into old git territory now for me with all of the examples that you're citing. Please don't laugh like that, Sam. On a lighter note, have you ever seen an Andean salamander in the wild?
I can't say I have. Are you going to tell me that they run 15 miles an hour?
I am indeed, yes. Between 12 and 15.
Every day's a school day.
Well, a squirrel. A squirrel typically moves between 10 or 12 miles per hour, but can reach... if the occasion deserves, if the occasion demands, a squirrel can get up to 15 miles an hour. I don't know how helpful that is.
Then.
I'm trying to imagine a squirrel Going as fast as possible. And I don't know if it's helping me actually picture how fast an e-bike would also go at the same...
You don't often see them running down the road. That's the problem.
Squirrels?
Yeah.
No, not on scooters. Well, you're on. Okay, great start. Thank you for treating this subject with the seriousness that it actually deserves and for politely skirting around the question of whether my reaction is slightly born of Douglas Adams's third law of what I have dubbed old gittitis, by which anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things. I don't like it because it's new. 12:26 is the time. John is in Hounslow. John, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, John.
Thank you for highlighting the bicycle helmet issue.
Yes.
I always wear mine, and I've headbutted street furniture on two occasions, which would have seriously injured me.
By accident, John?
Oh,
I see.
Yes.
Okay. Carry on.
Slippery. So just happens.
Yes.
I'm unashamedly an old git on this. I think these electric bikes are thoroughly dangerous, and near Austerley tube station I saw one heading west on the Crow Rest Road, not on the road, on the bike path, doing not less than 40, I suspect as much as 50.
What? I think that's feasible, but what faculties are you using when you estimate how fast something's going?
Experience of driving and cycling, road use. I make a note of vehicles going past. I used to live in Biggin Hill, and I'd to wait for the bus by the airport, and I could see cars that were doing 30 miles an hour clearly, and then there were some that were going a bit faster, and then there were the idiots who were doing 50, 60, and 70.
So are we going to be sitting here in 5 years' time going, huh, you see, me and John told you so, we're right, you're wrong? Or are we going to be sitting here in 5 years' time going, yeah, I think we may have been a bit daft on that one because it is just technology. Video didn't kill the radio star, and we just don't like it because it's new and it's slightly unnerving, but we're watching the inevitable march of progress.
I don't know. I think it'll be chaos it'll be another thing that Nigel Farage finds good to have a go at.
Because, God forbid. Well, I'm abandoning it and that day for certain. But I don't know, you see, because I thought that Sam's points about delivery drivers and the necessity of the gig economy was very powerful. It doesn't justify it. If something's wrong, the fact that people have no choice but to deploy it doesn't make it less wrong. It just makes their behaviour much, much, much less culpable. Thank you, John. Try to not headbutt any street furniture again. It is very dangerous, as you say, and it is, as I say, I don't know why, it's the mother and daughter last night that really brought this subject home for me, rather than the examples John describes, which we're all familiar with, of people sort of overtaking cheetahs, to continue with my animal and mammal based comparisons. Roger Bannister, Keith, when he did his 4 minute mile, think about it, if you do a mile in 4 minutes, what speed are you going? On average. Come on. You can do this. 1 mile in 4 minutes. How many miles would you do in an hour? It's quite a simple calculation. And if you're too dozy to come up with the answer, I'll tell you after the very latest news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Britain's most senior police officer has warned that prison reforms will lead to more crime. Some criminals could be released a third of the way through their jail terms as part of the changes in England and Wales. The energy regulator Ofgem's announced that thousands of customers who had prepayment meters force-fitted will receive compensation. Those eligible could see payouts of up to £1,000. And Thames Water has been given the largest fine ever issued by the regulator Ofwat. It'll pay more than £120 million after two investigations into wastewater and dividend payments. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, highs of 22 degrees.
LBC. The legendary George Smiley is back. It's spring 1963, a Russian agent has defected in the most unusual of circumstances, and Smiley will soon find himself entangled in a perilous mystery that will strike at the heart of his greatest enemy. return to the spy world of John le Carré with the gripping Sunday Times best-selling thriller Carla's Choice by award-winning novelist Nick Harkaway. Out now in paperback.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver, and Daddy helped me make...
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now, I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 12:32. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I forget sometimes that you don't concentrate as hard as I do while I'm doing this. Obviously, you've got other things to do. You know, you might be doing your job while I do mine. I can be background noise. It was a bit of a joke, that comment about Roger Bannister. I'm searching for a way of being entirely clear in my own head how fast 15 miles an hour is. And I don't think that the Andean... What was it again? The Andean what? What did I say a moment ago? Not an aardvark. It was an Andean salamander, was it? An Andean salamander? That's not helpful. That can go at 15 miles an hour. So I'm trying to picture in my mind what 15 miles an hour looks like. I've got an Andean salamander or a very fast squirrel. But squirrels just go in short bursts. You need to see a squirrel doing 100 metres or something like that to get a proper idea of what 15 miles an hour looks like. I don't think it's very quick. But Roger Bannister ran a mile in a minute, in 4 minutes. So if you times... Or rather, if you divide 60 minutes by 4, you get 15, which means that if he was doing an average, he was doing 15 miles an hour. But lots of people took that seriously, and my inbox is now full of people showing me the sums they've done and coming up with the answer 15 miles. It was kind of a rhetorical question. Even I can do 60 divided by 4. So I've now got an image of Roger Bannister, but of course he didn't do it all at the same... Did he do it all at the same speed? Maybe he did. How fast do you think Usain Bolt goes? What was it? Correct, faster. What was his top speed during his 100-metre world record run? He was close to 27.8 miles an hour, so almost double. Usain Bolt can run twice as fast as a legal e-bike. So there's no earthly way that the majority of the vehicles that you see on your days out are obeying the law. And quite a few of you seem to be concerned that something's happened to James O'Brien and Alan Partridge has taken over the presenting duties on this programme. I have no idea what you mean by that. All I will tell you is that the tension between moral panic and old gittitis is strong. 12:35 is the time. The number you need is 03456060973. Is this going to be something we look back on and think, how the hell did we ever let that happen? Or is it something that is unfolding under our noses in real time and simply represents progress at best and inevitable change at least? Tony's in Western Supermare. Tony, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Good to talk to you.
Hello, mate.
I could get emotional talking about this because one of my
good old friends, Karine Chartier, 85-year-old amazing Austrian woman, who was trilingual, worked as a bilingual, trilingual translator for the likes of the United Nations, and lived in Nice, where I lived for 4 years, was killed in March last year by a guy on a scooter.
Oh, Lord, I'm sorry.
Now, in France, you can drive up to 25 kilometres a mile an hour, which is the equivalent, I think, of 15 miles per hour.
It's about the same.
If you've got insurance in streets like Nice, but this guy didn't have insurance. He was going at 35 kilometres per hour. The streets are shared, the pavements are shared with the crossovers all the time between the scooters and the and pedestrians. And she was hit. He wasn't looking where he was going too fast. And she fell over backwards, hit her head and died, which was obviously very traumatic for her family and her friends. And I can't see that that's not the sort of thing that's going to keep happening here, even if you brought in laws and you regulated it. And I really don't understand why all these years later we've still got so many people whizzing around on them. I actually use one myself, but it's not motorised. It's just a good old-fashioned push scooter. And the other day a lady told me off and said, "You're not allowed then, they're against the law." And I showed her that it was a normal one that everyone can use, and it wasn't going to speed. But it's ridiculous, James. I just really don't understand why.
I wish the grounds for your contribution weren't so serious, Tony. I really do, because I mean that puts an entirely different dimension on things, and it falls to me, of course, to remind you that you can't extrapolate a policy from one experience. You know, anecdote and data are not the same thing. But I think that your story, your friend's story, is more important than that. It feels like an inevitable consequence of the current approach to this phenomenon, doesn't it? And I'm amazed it doesn't happen more, to be honest with you. And for every tragedy like the one you described, there'll be 100 or 1,000 near misses or less serious incidents that are a consequence of this having become, and I hate this phrase in most contexts, but I think it applies here, it's a bit of a wild west, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The guy's in prison, he's only just been, obviously took a while for the case to come around, but he's gone to prison for 12 months, fine as well. The judge described him as very contrite. You're absolutely, as soon as he'd done it, he was so sad about what he'd done, but it's too late. And the example you gave, the mother and her daughter, what would she think for the rest of her life? She thinks it's nothing. I actually lived in Nice for 4 years. I got knocked off my bike and was ended up in hospital, had stitches in my head, and it was my fault I didn't have a helmet on. But you don't think about these things till it's too late. Your children are so important and everyone else is so important that this is something that really they should be taken off the streets immediately and destroyed.
I think I agree with you. I mean, albeit that it would leave some people in serious trouble if their livelihood depends on being able to zip around. But there are legal ways that you can do that. You know, I'm sure they're a lot cheaper than traditional mopeds, for example, but the market would adjust. It would fix itself. You've introduced psychology to it. And I wonder whether thinking about that mother and daughter and recognizing that, you know, they're but for the grace of God go any of us, because of what you've just described, as they become more and more commonplace, it becomes more and more likely that people are not going to be fully cognizant of the potential dangers. Do you know what I mean? I didn't wear a helmet when I bashed my head in. And I was quite good at wearing helmets on my normal bicycle when I'm going out with it, because when I lock it up, I'll lock the helmet with it. But when I was riding a line bike, I stopped wearing a helmet and I paid the price. Luckily, I lived to tell the tale and what have you. But the psychology...
James, I think for individuals, you need a shock to your system. My 21-year-old, when she learned to drive, she had a shock. She had an accident and she's a much, much better driver since. My wife, who works in catering, had a shock when she... realised that she might have served something that could have hurt someone because she got an ingredient wrong and they asked advice on it. Luckily nothing happened, but she got a shock. And you get a shock and you never do it again. But if you don't get that individual shock, it's not enough to...
So do you think we'll sit here... I'll ask you what I asked John in Hounslow. Do you think that we will sit here in 5 or 10 years' time and marvel at how lackadaisical we were back in the day, or will we be sitting here reflecting upon how much the situation has changed and how even more commonplace these vehicles are now?
No, because you're sharing, it's too close, you're sharing too close a space between pedestrians and
so you think we will look back and think, how on earth were we so lax about it back then, and the law will catch up with the behaviour? Because that's the other element that you remind us of, Tony. And once again, my condolences on the loss of your friend. That's awful, absolutely awful. But it's another example, isn't it? Of I always thought this. First time I ever thought this was with the internet, and how behaviour moves much faster than laws. And goodness me, that's turned out to be so true and so relevant. The fact that the so-called, you know, the attempts to regulate what happens online are lagging miles behind what is actually happening online. Online safety being perhaps the best example of how people doing bad things will be far and ahead in front of the people trying to stop them from doing bad things. I don't know whether water regulation falls into that category, to try to knit together all the topics that we've talked about today. But that's sometimes what happens, you know. It happens with drugs as well, actually. So I can knit together all three. So a new synthetic drug appears on the market. It's not actually illegal. The law has to catch up with the chemistry to criminalise something that is profoundly dangerous. I don't imagine spice was illegal, was it, when it was first concocted in a laboratory? You wouldn't have been able to make something illegal if it hadn't previously existed. So I do wonder whether we will look back on the proliferation of these vehicles, inevitable though that proliferation may be in the current economic circumstances, and find ourselves thinking that really should never have happened. I can't believe that we didn't act sooner. 12:42 is the time. Tony, take care. James is in Finchley. James, what would you like to say?
Hi. I do agree with what the previous person was saying about safety and whatnot.
Whatnot?
But unfortunately, I also believe that we can't turn back time and the technology already exists. So rather than making them entirely illegal, it would be more logical to, you know, try and regulate it, make laws around helmets, insurance and things like that.
Yeah, if it's got an engine, it should probably need to be insured. I'm not a big fan of the old argument about cyclists needing to be insured. I think that's a bit of a red herring. But if you're moving fast enough, well, I suppose people would make the same argument about cycles, but if your engine is powerful enough to do some serious damage, the idea that you're not insured, it does seem a little bit absurd. But why can't we turn the clock back? Why can't, when we've done it with other things, you know, laws get introduced and then they get repealed again? Why can't we just remove them all, make it an offence to be on the road on one of these things entirely?
Well, it currently is an offence to have them on the road. And I'm sure you know, working in London, they are absolutely everywhere, and that is just clearly not going to work. So what would be better is give people the opportunity to insure it, maybe give people courses on how to ride them safely, things like that. And also, I think I can tie back to the previous topic about smoking weed as well.
Go on, then.
I think another issue is that when older people get told that something is illegal, they use that as a excuse to be aggressive towards younger people. So my girlfriend actually was using an electric scooter to get to work every day, and it was a few miles the journey, and she'd have to do it in any weather, lots of hills, things like that. And the scooter was a godsend. Her dad got it for her, and it really opened up doors as to where she can work, you know, how long it takes her to get there and things like that.
Yeah.
But she did have an experience a couple of times where people have actually even crossed the road to get in her face and start screaming and shouting at her about it being illegal.
Was she on the road or the pavement?
I believe she may have been on the pavement on that occasion.
She can't be bombing around on the pavement, mate.
I understand that, but at the same time, I mean...
Also, how do you know they were old? There might be lots of young people who don't want to get hit by a 20-mile-an-hour scooter on the pavement.
I do agree. None of us want to be hit by them, and a lot of people driving them are extremely dangerous. When I'm at work, I have people cutting in front of me in the van and swerving the roads. But also, I think part of that is because they're illegal.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a legal place to ride them. I think one of the previous callers said this as well. They have to ride it in a certain way to not get caught, and they feel like they are criminals and they're being watched by people.
Do you think, different types? I mean, the delivery riders aren't going to be feeling like that, but the young scallywags might be. It's a motor, not an engine. You will not believe how many texts I've had telling me that it's a motor, not an engine, and that is largely why I don't do motoring topics on this program, because of the relationship between... Well, I suppose it is important. It's about, at least a couple of you added the word sorry, like Paul. It's not an engine, James, it's a motor. Sorry. Best regards, Paul. James, thank you. And I don't know. I honestly don't know. I love the way sometimes when we're having a Natter, the question evolves. And this is really interesting, and no one can answer it definitively. 5-10 years from now, do we look back on this and marvel that we didn't act sooner? Do we marvel at the fact that we had these relatively powerful motors zipping along and endangering everybody, not least the people on them, but perhaps more pertinently the people in their path, and we just sort of accepted it or made powerful arguments about the delivery rider culture, all of that? Or will we sit there 5 to 10 years from now and inhabit the world that James describes, where things have become more normalised and therefore safer, and everyone is recognising the inevitable march of technology, and people aren't on the pavements anymore, and if they are, they're on a specific bit? I just don't know. But I think that point he makes about turning back time is powerful, don't you? Because if something is so baked into our behaviour, getting it out of our behaviour is a bit like, and who can guess what of my top 10 analogies I'm about to use now? Getting it out of our behaviour would be a bit like trying to get the eggs out of a baked cake.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Met Chief is right, isn't he? You can't empty prisons, jail fewer people and expect safer streets without more funding.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand-finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't give up, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My Claim Group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple. Big, big, big motoring world. Wow, wow, wow motoring world.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Out of all of the ex-MPs, who would it be funniest to hear complaining about the amount of money they receive from the state? You could call it, if you like, a social safety net. And we talk often on the programme about the difficulty of distinguishing between the safety net and the trampoline. But people who have historically been quite cutting about the provision of a social safety net for ordinary people. Imagine one of them suddenly deciding that they deserve a luxury social safety net, that they somehow deserve to receive largesse from the state that they would very happily deny to other people. I'm going to give you a clue because it turns out that the answer this guy gives to Victoria Derbyshire on the BBC wasn't entirely true.
What do you want to do if you're not an MP?
Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran sailing.
Okay. It turns out that hard man of Brexit, Steve Baker, has not managed to turn skydiving... What's the other one? Fast catamaran... motorcycling. Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran sailing. He hasn't managed to turn any of them into paid employment because he is now calling for MPs who lose their seat to receive an entire year's salary. In addition to what they already receive, I think, or possibly instead of what they already receive. He was an MP for 14 years. He said that the money they receive upon being handed their sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap by the electorate is nowhere near large enough. He says, if we want MPs to exercise leadership, there has to be some kind of safety net that you fall into if you lose your seat. Baker is calling for 1 year's redundancy pay for ex-MPs to get us, and in his words, over the horrible process of actually getting a job when you're well known. You know my views on Brexit, and he was indeed the self-styled hard man of Brexit. But if you are in the fast catamaran sailing business, or indeed the world of motorcycling, or skydiving even, and you have vacancies in your business, in your firm, in your organisation, perhaps you could give this guy a shout.
Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran sailing.
That's a CV, isn't it? That's both a dream, an ambition, and a CV. So, do you know anyone who works in any of those fields? And listen, I wouldn't wish unemployment on anybody. Well, maybe some people. But the point here is, of course, that the idea of the social safety net is good enough for me, you might suggest, but not for thee. A point made rather splendidly, I think, by the Professor of Political Economy, the Professor of the Political Economy of Europe at LSE, Jonathan Hopkin, on Blue Sky earlier today. So I just thought, given it was... can we play the full-length clip again, just to put a smile on everybody's face on this Wednesday afternoon?
What do you want to do if you're not an MP?
Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran sailing.
Fast catamaran sailing. I'm a great student of comedy, as you know. I'm not a practitioner of it by any stretch of the imagination. But why is it 10 times funnier when he says fast catamaran sailing? Is there a big world of slow catamaran sailing or mid-range catamaran sailing? It has to be fast. Fast. I'm Steve Baker. Fast catamaran. None of this dilly-dallying with medium pace catamaran sailing for me. It has to be fast catamaran. I could listen to that. I could have that on loop. Can I get it as a ringtone, Keith?
Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran
Hello?
Sailing.
James O'Brien. Paul's in Brentford. It wasn't you, was it, on that scooter yesterday?
It absolutely wasn't me, no.
Glad to hear it. What made you pick up the phone?
A few things, actually. I mean, I don't think you're an old kid at all.
Thank you very much, Paul. Means a lot.
I think you are a responsible person, and I think that there are a number of problems with this whole thing.
Yeah.
I think this all started with the introduction of the hire vehicles. So with the introduction of hire bikes and hire scooters. So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing is, I mean, the law, as I understand it, is that it is a maximum of a 250-watt motor, and it must be pedal-assisted, and it must only go up to 15 miles an hour. So once your vehicle is going at 15 miles an hour, your bicycle, any pedal assistance from the motor cuts out. So that's the law. That's what a line bike is. That's why line bikes don't go that
fast. You can't go. No, exactly. There's a sort of upper limit.
Yeah, 15 miles an hour, 250-watt motor. But then what's happened is that there are hundreds of sites where you can convert an ordinary bicycle with anything up to a 1,000-watt a motor. And there are dodges that you can do that effectively give them a throttle, just like on a motorcycle. So the vast majority of the bikes that you see, the delivery drivers, Deliveroo and stuff, they're illegal because they are motorized electric bicycles, electric motorbikes is what they are. They don't cut out. They have no limit on the speed that they can go at. They are not pedal assisted. And, you know, I've seen these guys. There's a guy I see on Boston Manor Road, because I've got a bicycle, a motorbike and a car.
Right.
And there's a guy comes down Boston Manor Road past the harvester on a regular basis.
Mate, I'm trying to resist allegations of turning into Alan Partridge. And you're talking about my local street and my local harvester on national radio. This is awful.
But it's my local street.
It is, but it's also mine, and that makes everything worse.
No, it doesn't. Go on, because this is going on all over the country.
Exactly. That's the point. It's not the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre. It's a national issue.
It is.
I know.
But he's doing 30 miles an hour.
I know he is. I know the fella. He's a menace.
This guy's coming down to... He's got a motorcycle crash helmet on, thank God.
Yes.
But if he hits somebody... You know, the brakes aren't good enough. It's not funny at all.
Why do you and I care and other people don't?
Well, I don't know.
Nor do I.
I don't know.
It's weird.
And when I see them riding these things without helmets, I came off my bike 17 years ago, and the ambulance guy that got me off the floor said if I hadn't have been wearing my crash helmet, I'd have been dead. That's what he said to me. And my crash helmet was split in half.
And it did the job. And it, wait till you see the mother and daughter I saw yesterday evening, mate. Seriously, it gives me chills just thinking about it.
But they're everywhere.
I know they are. You're my brother. Because we feel it, Paul. We feel it, and other people don't feel it like they should. Yeah, I don't know why.
Have you seen this one where the kids have got helmets on and the parents don't?
Yes, I see that quite a lot. That is bizarre.
So if you fall off, your kid's going to be brought up without a parent.
Blimey. Yeah.
I can't argue
with you. There's the logic. If you fall off and die, I mean, not just if you fall off. I don't want any children listening to worry that their parents are going to get taken away if they fall off their bike.
Here's another one for you, James.
Go on, then.
If you've got a motorbike, because I've got a motorbike, if you put your helmet on the petrol tank, if it drops off, by the time it hits the ground, it's going at 30 miles an hour.
Good Lord. That's twice as fast as a squirrel.
Yeah, but that's how you're headed.
No, I hear you. No, I know you're right. It is just a weird one. We'll do the psychology of it on another occasion. I'm going to go full Partridge now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
How excited are you about the new Lidl?
Oh, can't wait.
It's going to be mad, right? I'll see you in the middle aisle, Paul.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
June the 5th.
Are you going to be there?
I'm opening it. No, I'm not. That's a joke. It's absolutely a joke.
What day is June the 5th?
I don't know. Do your own research. Honestly, do I look like Google? But if I'm not there on the 5th, I'll be there shortly afterwards. Mind how you go, mate. And I shall look out for that menace that you describe, and you look out for the ones I described. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio. You can listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, Ben Kentish is in for Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you. It's on a Thursday, June the 5th.
Thank you, Sheila.
There you go. I had to check myself.
Well played.
3 o'clock today, the possession of small quantities of cannabis for personal use should be decriminalised. So says a report backed by the London Mayor. Let's talk about drug use at 3. At 2, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is urging doctors not to strike. And I am too. I'll tell you why after 2. I'm going to start with what Sir Mark Rowley's been saying, though. I think it's really important. The Met Chief, he's got to be right, hasn't he? You can't empty prisons, jail fewer people, and expect safer streets without more funding for police. And I know they're not emptying prisons fully. They're just going to be putting different types of people in those prisons, more serious criminals. But some pretty serious people are going to be let out as well. So is it right that the police get more funding? It's a yes from me.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Britain's most senior police officer has warned that prison reforms in England and Wales will lead to more crime. Some criminals could be released a third of the way through their jail terms as part of the changes. Sir Mark Rowley says there needs to be serious investment in June's spending review. to deal with demand. Cabinet Minister Sir Chris Bryant has told LBC government is sympathetic, but has refused to confirm any extra funding.
They're going to be very tough decisions. I don't want to pretend anything other. There's not a lot of money around. I think somebody once said that socialism is the language of priorities, and that's precisely what we're engaged in, trying to make sure that our priorities as a government are matched by where we make our spending.
Energy companies will pay out more than £70 million to customers over the forced fitting of prepayment meters. They were installed where some people had fallen behind on their bills, meaning supplies could be cut off. Thames Water has been given the largest fine ever, issued by the regulator Ofwat. It'll pay more than £120 million after two investigations into wastewater and dividend payments. Editor-in-chief at City AM, Christian May, has more details for LBC.
They've stressed that this fine will be paid by the company and its investors and not customers. I've just got the full statement here through from the chief executive of Ofwat, who says this is a clear-cut case where Thames Water let down customers and failed to protect the environment. It goes on to say that dividend payments must be linked to performance and environmental standards, something which hasn't happened.
The Home Office has insisted it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. It follows Sir Sadiq Khan's backing of a review that says possession of small quantities should be decriminalised. London's mayor says it shows a compelling evidence-based case to change the rules. And the UK has recorded its sunniest spring on record, with 4 days of the season still remaining. Provisional data from the Met Office shows 630 hours of sunshine were recorded from March the 1st until May the 27th. It beat the previous sunniest spring, which was in 2020, by 4 hours. A short time ago in the city, the FTSE 100 was trading down 12 at £87.65. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.19. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places this afternoon, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, highs of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Got an unexpected message, phone call or email that claims to be from HMRC? Take care. It could be a criminal pretending to be us. To protect yourself, never rush to share personal information or part with your money. Learn to recognise signs of a scam, such as being put under pressure to share bank details. And if something seems fishy, report it to HMRC straight away by searching HMRC Scams on gov.uk. Protect, recognise, report.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I'm having one of those days where, to my mind at least, and I'll be keen to know what yours is telling you, certain big political questions being asked or big social questions being asked today have very clear, correct answers. Not always easy answers, but very clear, correct answers. And I think this, that we're going to talk about this hour, is one of them. The chief of the Metropolitan Police, the commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, has basically said, if you're going to transform how we do the criminal justice system, particularly in terms of sentencing and prisons, the prison population and early releases, and who goes to prison and who doesn't, and when they don't, how we manage them outside of prison, you're going to have to put some more resources into not just policing. He's talking about policing, but obviously there's things like probation as well and drug services and the like. And we're going to talk about drugs at 3 o'clock. But I think the obvious answer is, yes, you're right, Sir Mark. The next big question, I suppose, is what we do if you think he's right. You might disagree with me, but I think after over a decade of cuts to policing, more already in the pipeline and in the offing, this big societal and justice change that's been heralded by the Gawk review, I think, does beg serious funding questions. So let's find out exactly what he and others have been saying about this with Aggie Chambray, LBC's political correspondent. We'll speak in a few minutes to Dr. Victor Olisa, a former chief superintendent in the Met. Talk us through what he and others have been saying about this, Aggie, if you would.
Yes, Sheila. So basically, the Met Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, and five other senior police officers have basically made this extraordinary intervention. They've written in The Times, publicly calling on the government to provide serious investment at this month's spending review. Now, the spending review is on June the 11th. That's basically where all of the various different departments negotiate with the Treasury. Those conversations are ongoing at the moment. Negotiate with the Treasury to see what they are going to have to cut, basically. And a number of departments have already settled their funding settlements. Some are holding out. I was speaking to someone yesterday who said, our department's holding out because basically you need to work out at exactly the right time is best to agree something, and they think holding out for them is the right one. We know that the Home Office is one of those departments that is still holding out for better settlement. So that basically is the reason, I would suspect, for the timing on
because
this.
They will have known that that Gawk review was coming, and they would have had some idea of what was going to be in it, and it has massive policing implications.
Absolutely huge. But this is what Sir Mark Rowley told LBC this morning.
We buy into the government's ambition about stronger neighbourhood policing that tackles antisocial behaviour and crime such as shoplifting where people live, their ambition about halving violence against women and girls, and their ambition about halving knife crime. But we're in a difficult world. Demand for police services is going up 5% every year. Areas like violence against women and girls are at epidemic levels. And with all that pressure and the volatility we see in the world around us, like we saw with the riots last summer, policing, we're up for reform, but we also need more money. And that's what we're talking about today. It's only with more money that we can grow the strength of policing that can meet all those proper ambitions of the government.
So Sir Mark Rowley saying there that basically they need way more money. And as you say, this comes after a week where we got the Gawk review, the sentencing review. And one of the key cornerstones things that we talked about last week, Sheila, from the Gawk review was basically that some prisoners will be let out of their sentence after a third, 33% of the time, with good behaviour. That's one element. The second element that's really important for policing is that basically 12-month sentences will mostly be scrapped. And that, people have acknowledged, is going to put a lot of pressure on probation services, but it's also going to put a huge amount of
policing.
Exactly. Yeah. And Sir Mark Rowley basically saying this morning that a proportion of offenders who would have been in prison will be committing further offences because probation can't do a perfect job. So this is Sir Mark Rowley talking about that sentencing review.
So the sentencing review is really critical. Government's got a difficult problem to fix with sentencing policy historically and prison building haven't been lined up. So they've got to deal with that. But if we're going to now deal with offenders on the streets who would previously have been in prison, however good a job probation do with the extra money they've got, some of those offenders are going to commit more crime and more trouble locally. That work's going to wash back onto policing, and we need the resources to deal with that. The other point we've been making to the Chancellor in our article is we've got good research which shows safe communities is where people invest, and for every pound you spend on policing, you'll get £4 back in GDP. So we can help the government's growth agenda as well by creating safe communities.
Now, we've also heard this morning from Chris Bryant. He's a minister who's basically been responding to reporting about the spending review, which, as I mentioned, is on June the 11th, and responding to these comments from Sir Mark Rowley.
Look, the spending review is mid-process at the moment. I'm a minister in two departments. I know it's a really tough set of decisions that the Chancellor's got to make. Of course, you know, crime and our security and tackling violence against women and girls, all of these issues are really important parts of what we want to achieve over the next few years. And I'm sure those are the things that Rachel Reeves as Chancellor is considering. They're going to be very tough decisions. I don't want to pretend anything other. There's not a lot of money around. And, you know, I think somebody once said that socialism is the language of priorities. And that's precisely what we're engaged in, trying to make sure that our priorities as a government are matched by where we make our spending.
It's so interesting to listen to those kind of quid pro quo conversations that clearly are happening ahead of the spending review. I interviewed the